Good afternoon. I'll call to order the meeting of the State Government Budget Conference Committee on Senate File 1997 for April 30, 2007. We have a quorum present in, on both sides in the House and the Senate. Obviously, we're not able to meet on Saturday or on Friday. So since our last meeting, we indicated that we would like to have go through the bill and identify those things that were identical or nearly identical and see if there was anything that could be adopted there. We have something prepared. I believe, Mr. Shepard, are you prepared? Who's could be going through this? I just want to put you on notice. Obviously, people are quite concerned about targets and so forth. Representative Kahn and I were met with the leadership earlier today, just before the floor sessions, and we were provided with some numbers. I'll kind of outline them as I understand them right now so that you have the same information. We will be, after we go through the side-by-sides, I think we can talk about some parameters and some things we're going to be going. The first thing you need to know is that we were given targets. We were also given a deadline. The deadline we were given was noon Wednesday, and that is when this bill has to be completed. So we don't have a lot of time, and we do have some work ahead of us to get there. The numbers, as I understand them in council and in fiscal analysts on both sides, if I misstate anything, please correct me. But we will be operating off of a state government base budget in 2008-2009 of $549,122,000. 549,122 for 08-09. Okay, and then in 2010 and 2011, the base would be $551,010,000. That's 551,010. So those are the base numbers. We have an ongoing target for 08 and 09 of $55,703,000. $55,703,000 in 08 09. And then for 10 and 11, $65,208,000. Now this is ongoing money for 2010, 2011, $65,208,000. So this would be new ongoing money that we could be looking at for new things. We have a one-time funding budget of $51,100,000. Now, before people get too excited, there are some conditions put on that that Representative Kahn and I have been given, but that's the number we were given for one-time money. So is there any disagreement from anybody that those are the numbers that we were given? Okay. Here are some assumptions that were made and some of the things that we have to look at within the bill that we have. One thing that's going to go through all of the budgets is the compensation adjustment. And we have to be the same all the way through. We can't have one conference committee with one number and a different conference committee with a different one. So the leadership and the bodies have agreed that the compensation adjustments for all budgets would be a 3% for 08 and 3% for 09. Now, the Senate's compensation salary adjustment was 3.25% for both years. The House's was, I believe, 2%. But the leadership's agreement was 3% for 08, 3% for 09. The budget targets that we have been given have to fund any bills that have fiscal impacts within our policy, within our bills, whether they're within the bills here or if we adopt something that's traveling separately, we have to account for them. They have indicated, and I'm not quite sure what this means, but funding for House File 1526, Fair Campaign Practices, and House File 1547, State Elections Campaign Fund, are not included within this part. One-time expenditures are to be used for provisions that generally affect one-time expenditures. We cannot use one-time money for something that's going to be ongoing. Say we'll fund it right now and figure out down the road how we're going to fund it later. If it's one-time in nature, that's appropriate for one-time money, but we cannot use it for ongoing. And finally, in setting the targets, they directed us to use the tax compliance numbers at the House figures. So just so you have the information that was given to us, that is what we're going to be operating off of when we get into the budget discussions. As I said, we'll talk a little bit more about some specific ideas and proposals, and the Senate will have a budget proposal a little later on, and we already provided a copy just a little while ago to the House. We had to make some changes, so I don't know if you had it in time to look at it, but we're ready to start talking, and we'll obviously respond to give the House time to respond as well too. But that is where we're at right now. Are there any questions or anything anybody wants to point out at this point? If not, why don't we have staff go through this? We have a document before us that says language items identical and nearly identical. I think if there's anything that has a fiscal impact, if you could point that out to us, that would be helpful. Otherwise, somebody could start going through this. We could start at least identifying what's in both bills that's identical or similar. Mr. Shepard.
Mr. Chair and members, I can start, and if Mr. Bodern wants to jump in or take over at any point, then I assume he will. you have in your packets a different side-by-side for each article of the bill. So I'll start with the side-by-side on Article 1, and the table that I'm working from, I believe, is also in your packet. It's several pages that looks like this, where Mr. Bodern and I have attempted to go through and point out things that are identical. Sometimes with this amount of a large amount of print in small type, if we've missed something and anybody in the audience thinks we've made a mistake, we'd both appreciate it if you could let us know if something, in fact, is not identical or if we're mischaracterizing something. And we've tried. So I'll begin, Mr. Chair, on Article 1, page R4 on the side-by-side. And as you indicated, Mr. Chair, we've tried to identify in Article 1 only items that are somewhat independent from fiscal items, so they're not dependent on the budget decisions that you make later. But on page R4, at the bottom of the page on both sides, there is an identical rider dealing with legislative technology. The next rider that we've identified as identical is on page R5.
When we see something like this, and looking at our legislative, at our timeline,
mm-hmm.
is it appropriate to move that we adopt it?
Perhaps
as we're looking at it, or should we look at the whole package? Would you rather have us look at the whole package?
You know, each one of these is going to may raise an issue unto itself. If maybe it's just for efficiency, just to ask us if there's any questions with each one, and then move to adopt it. Maybe that'll just get it out of the way, and we don't have to think about it again. So.
And if anyone, Mr. Chairman, I would just suggest that if anyone has any problem with not adopting it, it doesn't mean we're not going to do it, but just set it aside. We're trying to get rid of the things that we can just really don't need to read again each time we go through.
So Representative Kahn moves the first item, legislative technology rider, be adopted. It's identical. Any questions on this? Anybody wants to be heard on this? Hearing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, motion prevails. Next.
Mr. Chair, the next rider that we've identified as identical is on page R5. If you look on the House side, it begins on line 4.28. On the Senate side, 4.13. This is a rider that has appeared in this bill several times before that requires the Commissioner of Finance to report on personnel costs incurred by the governor's office that were supported by appropriations to other agencies.
Is there discussion on this motion? Is there anybody who wants to be heard on this issue? Seeing none, Representative Kahn moves the language on the report on the governor's office personnel cuts be adopted. Discussion? Hearing none. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, say no. Motion prevails.
Mr. Chair, the next item that we've identified as identical is on page R16. Relates to the, prepared the side-by-side before. There was a new version of the side-by-side that's been prepared since I did the table. It's on page R17 at the top.
R17, okay.
And this is substantively identical. In discussions, Mr. Bodern and I, at the very top of page R17, section 44, on the Senate side, I believe with the fiscal staff, we've agreed that the Senate language here is preferable technically. We haven't had an opportunity to consult with anyone in the executive branch or otherwise, but the concept is identical, and we thought the Senate language expressed it better.
The point I can is the right side the Senate language and the left side the House language?
Yes. Correct.
Okay, because it says Senate language on top there, too.
Discussion. Anybody wants to be heard on this one? Representative Kahn moves that the Senate language be adopted for the budgetary balance carry forward.
So, Mr. Chairman?
Senator Rest.
So that means that we're adopting lines 4432 through 44.3 on Senate side and setting aside 1324 to 1332 of the House. I just want to make sure that...
The head note, 43.32 through 44.3 on page R17. We're adopting the Senate language as opposed to the language on the left side, which is 24 to 13.32. Yeah, that's what we'd be adopting, the Senate language.
Mr. Chair,
probably get asked about that every time.
Okay. Senator Singh.
Is there any issue with online on the House side 13.32 with 2009, with that year not being in on the Senate side?
Council, Mr. Botter?
Mr. Chairman, I think the effect of carrying it forward to the next biennium by specifying June 30th, 2008 basically has it's the same effect as the House language.
Further discussion? Anybody else who wishes to be heard on this one? Representative Kahn moves that the budgetary balance carry forward Senate language be adopted. Hearing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say no. Motion prevails. Mr. Shepard.
Mr. Chair, the next language that's identical begins on the bottom of page R19, and it on the House side, it is beginning on line 15.18, and it continues over to line 16.4 on the House side on page R20. The language is, there's identical language on the Senate side. This is assuming that whatever compliance initiative that the conferees agree to adopt, that you would both want this report, and this is an identical report language.
Representative Kahn, discussion on this motion. Representative Kahn moves, and we have to be specific. It's identical language through 16.
Oh, it's going to be in a Senate file.
It's so a Senate file, so. Okay.
Adopt the Senate language.
The Senate language, I guess, yes. Mm-hmm. That Representative Kahn moves the Senate language for the report on compliance initiatives. Anyone who wants to be heard on this issue? Senator Representative Riddle.
Thank you. Just I believe the governor's office feels that the compliance in this is a little bit higher than they would like. I think they're at, 50 million?
That's about the amount.
At 41. I just want to convey the concerns of the governor's office that this is overly optimistic.
Okay. Representative Hahn.
Mr. Chairman, as the chairman pointed out, whatever level, and we're going to have some level, even if we go to what the governor asked, whatever level, we're going to want this report, no matter what. So this gives us, we have not settled on any number, and I'll just say one of the things that I'm looking at increasing the compliance is emphasizing some things that exist already as possible, listening to what their complaints are, why, although we'll obviously go into this in greater detail, but why they can't possibly make the, why they can't make the more aggressive targets that we've given, is that one of the things is just to further emphasize things that already exist in statute or fix them if they need to be made, which would allow telecommuting, which would encourage offices in other places than the Stassen building, for example, the expanding the revenue offices in Ely and things like that. Yeah. You know, I think we might point out these things either informally, or we might point them out in language, or we might even amend statutes if we need to make them more usable, if there's some reason why they haven't been used.
I don't think there's any question. Everybody agrees we're going to have tax compliance funding, and even the Revenue Commission recognizes that the level of it is to be discussed. This doesn't affect that. But, okay. So, Representative Kahn moves that the Senate language on 10.24 through 10.19. Oops, I've got the... Gotcha. Okay, 10.19 through 11.6 be adopted. Further discussion. Hearing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Those opposed, motion prevails. Okay, and... If staff is having any confusion on what we're doing here, please call it to my attention here. Okay. Mr. Shepard.
Mr. Chair and members, that's all that we've identified for right now in Article 1. You'll notice there are many other parts of Article 1 where the riders are identical, but they're tied to appropriation decisions, and so we thought they'll just follow when you make your decisions. So moving on to Article 2, that's a new stapled version of the side-by-side. That should be the thickest one that you have. The first item that we found that is identical in Article 2 is on page R5 of the side-by-side. It's Section 10 on the House side, Section 2 on the Senate side. It has to do with assumed name fees. And there's one, Mr. Chair, there's one technical difference. The House has an effective date that probably is not correct. We should use the Senate effective date, which would be July 1st of 2007, and not the House effective date. So on page R5, the Senate language would be 15.12 to 15.22.
You know, I'm not sure that I've got the right document. What am I?
Do I have the wrong version of this?
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah. Oh, I see. Okay. Article 2. I'm with you. Okay. Okay. Could you repeat that again? I see where I'm at.
Yes. Mr. Chair, it's on the Article 2 side by side, page R5. On the Senate side, the language is on page 15.12 through 15.22.
Okay.
With the Senate standard effective date, which would be July 1st.
So do we need to, can we just adopt the Senate language here? Is that what you're suggesting?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Okay.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Solberg.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Shepard, if we don't have an effective date, is it automatically July 1st?
Yes.
Mr. Chair and Representative Solberg, yes, that's correct. And the House, an earlier House version, we had a mistake in August 1st date there, and that's why I was suggesting that just using the automatic July 1st in the Senate bill.
There's a discussion on this. Anybody wants to be heard? Representative Kahn moves the Senate language be adopted on Article 2, page R5, 15.12 through 15.22, assumed name fees. Discussion on that motion. Hearing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
As opposed, say no. Motion prevails. Mr. Shepard.
Mr. Chair, the next identical language actually is a fiscal issue. But and so I don't know if you want to deal with it right now, but it's on page R6 at the top of the page, House Section 11, Senate Section 3. It is identical statutory language.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Rust.
I would prefer we set that aside.
Okay. Oh, hold on. And Mr. Shepard?
Mr. Chair, the next there's a cluster of language over the next nine pages of the side-by-side. It begins on page R6 at the bottom of the page on both sides. This was a separate bill in the Senate. It was Senate File 1436, which I believe has passed the entire Senate, Senator Roebling's bill. Mm-hmm. And the language of the bill is on the House side all the way from R6 through R. Page R14 on line 10.10 on the Senate side. There are two differences in here. As far as we can tell, the language is identical with with two exceptions. The exceptions are, if you look on page R12, on the house side, the very bottom of page R12, section 30, this is a section that was not part of the original House bill on this topic. This was added at some point during the legislative process in the House. This provision stating that if the state auditor provides preliminary data to a person for the purpose of review and verification, the person has to protect the data from unlawful disclosure. That's not in the Senate bill. And there's a provision in the Senate bill on page R14 at the top of the page. Section 20 of the Senate bill was not in the bill that passed the House. I believe that other than that, these are identical provisions. There's also one other section later in the bill on page R43 that relates to this and that is identical. It's on section 78 on the House side and section 21 on the Senate side.
Mr. Chairman?
Sir, yes.
I would request that this be set aside as well. Yeah. Mr. Chairman?
Russell Cox.
Is it necessary to set the whole thing aside, or can we just look at the differences?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Kahn, the Senate language is not in this bill. Senate language is from another bill, and I think we need a more full discussion about bills that were traveling alone as opposed to bills that got put in the omnibus bill. So I'm going to make that request about every bill that every time the Senate language is from a bill traveling alone, just because we need a more full discussion rather than taking it up.
Fine.
Okay.
Mr. Shepard.
Mr. Chair, the next provision that's identical is on page R20. It is section 44 on the House side, beginning on line 39.15, section 8 on the Senate side, beginning on line 18.5 down through 18.15.
This is statewide system billing. Is there discussion on this motion, on this provision? Anybody wants to be heard on this provision? Seeing none, Representative. Okay. This is on page R20, House language 39.15 through 39.25, Senate language 18.5 through 18.15. Representative Kahn moves the Senate language 18.5 through 18.15. Discussion on that motion. Hearing none, those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, motion prevails. Mr. Shepard.
Mr. Chair, the next set of identical language involves a section that not all the language in the section is identical, but there's one concept that is identical. That is on page R30. The section begins on page R32, but the identical language is on page R33. And the identical language on R33 is from lines 52.15 through 52.17 on the House side and 23.15 to 23.17 on the Senate side. If you flip back one page, you'll notice that on the House side there is some additional language that is relating to a different concept that is not in the Senate side. So that is not identical. It's just the language on R33 that's identical.
I think we probably have to talk about the whole area here. Yeah. So let's hold on that for a minute. Okay.
Mr. Chair, the next item is on R44, dealing with the Mississippi River Parkway Commission, and this is one that was carried in a separate Senate file.
Mr. Chairman, I make the request be set aside.
Okay.
Then the next item, Mr. Chair, that's identical is on page R47. On the House side, this begins on line 62.5, section 83. The Senate side, it begins on line 31.24, and it continues over to page R48, line 62.34 on the House side, line 32.20 on the Senate side. This is from a Secretary of State bill, and it deals with dissolved corporations.
Is there discussion on the provision relating to dissolved corporations from the Secretary of State's office? Anybody who wants to be heard on this provision? If not, Representative Kahn moves the Senate language from page 31.24 through 32.20 be adopted. Discussion. Hearing none. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed. Motion prevails. Mr. Shepard.
Mr. Chair, the next provision begins on page R50. And it begins at the very bottom of the page, just the head note, and appears on page R50. It continues all the way through all of page R51, and most of the new language is actually at the top of page R52. It would go on the House side all the way through line 66.23 on page R52, on the Senate side, line 34.3 on R52. You'll note that some of the changes here on line 66.14 on the House side and continuing on, some of these do involve some fiscal issues, relatively minor fiscal issues, but they are identical in both bills.
Representative Kahn.
I'm comfortable with adopting this.
To discussion on this motion on adopting name reservation filing fee from the Secretary of State. Anybody wants to be heard on this one?
And again, it's the Senate language.
Yeah, it'd be the Senate language because it's a Senate file. So,
yeah.
Representative Kahn moves to adopt the language from lines 32.21 through 34.3. Discussion on that motion. Hearing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, motion prevails. Mr. Shepard.
Mr. Chair and members, the next identical language is at the bottom of that page on the Uniform Commercial Code account, expanding some of the uses for that account. It begins on 66.30 on the House side with Section 91, 34.4 on the Senate side, and I assume that, as was the case with the other provision, that this should be, we should have probably pick up the Senate effective date on July 1st rather than the House effective date. Otherwise, those are identical.
Okay. Discussion on the UCC account language. Is there anybody who wants to be heard on it? Hearing none, Representative Kahn moves that the Senate language from 34.4 through 34.18 of Article 2 be adopted. Discussion on that motion. Hearing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, motion prevails. Mr. Shepard.
Mr. Chair and members, the next identical issue actually does have some fiscal impact. It is on page R55 at the top of the page. It's Section 93 on the House side, Section 34 on the Senate side. The Senate language going from 34.19 to 35.3. Mm-hmm. These are identical, but it does have some fiscal impact.
And this was the issue of just having a consistent fee, whether it's filed by paper or electronically, if I remember right. Is that that was the issue?
Yeah.
Okay.
I have no problems adopting this at this time.
Is there discussion on this section? Anybody who wants to be heard on this section? Hearing none, Representative Kahn moves at Article 2, Senate language, lines 34.19 through 35.3 be adopted. Discussion on that motion. Hearing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, motion prevails. Mr. Shepard.
Mr. Chair, the next cluster of identical language is on page R58 at the bottom of the page. It's line 70, begins at line 72.27, section 101 on the House side, line 35.4, section 35 on the Senate side. This is the definition of dependent for local government in health insurance, and the only difference here, there is a minor substantive difference in the effective dates. The Senate bill would be effective the day following final enactment. The House bill wouldn't be effective until July 1st.
I would move the Senate position on that.
Representative Kahn moves the Senate language.
You know, actually, I think the July 1st makes more sense.
I think
that on that one.
Okay. So it would be the
House
language.
House language.
Representative Kahn moves on Article 2, the House language, 72.27 through 73.2. Is there discussion on that motion? Is there anybody who wants to be heard on that motion? Hearing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Those opposed, motion prevails. Okay, Mr. Shepherd.
Mr. Chair, the next identical language is on page R62, and there's also a repealer related to this at the end of the bill on page R80. This is related to a repeal of local government the local government commission. This bill has passed both the House and the Senate in a separate bill. I, to the best of my knowledge, it has not been presented to the governor yet, so I don't believe he's had an opportunity to act on it. So I don't think it's become a law yet.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, just to make sure, we put this provision in our bill as well?
Yes, it's in both. It's in this bill. It's in both bills.
No,
it's not.
No, it's not. It doesn't indicate that, but it's not in this bill.
It's from Senate File 19.
Oh, I see. Yes.
It's
at the top, it says Senate language.
They say that in their summary, but we need to set it aside because it's from Senate File 19. It's not in Senate File 1997.
Okay.
Okay,
we're with you.
Much as I might like it to be.
Sure.
Yes.
Okay, Mr. Shepherd.
Mr. Chair, the next cluster of identical language is one that it deals with the Sesquicentennial Commission. There is another bill that both of the House and the Senate have passed on this topic, and that bill, I checked this morning, has not yet been presented to the governor. He has not had an opportunity to act upon it, but that bill has different language, and so you might, I don't know if you want to set yours aside until you see if that one passes or...
I think we should hold that and see if the governor acts on that one.
The Senate agreed to the House language that went to the governor. Is the language that was adopted by the House the same that is in the House version of Senate File 1949 that's in Senate File 1997 now?
Mr. Chair and Senator Rest, I don't know for sure because I don't have that with me, but I don't think it was exactly the same. I think that there was one amendment added on the House floor about energy efficiency.
Yes.
I think there may have been other differences as well, and I could check that if you'd like, but I don't think this is exactly the same.
Chairman, Mr. Chairman, I think it actually probably it is the same, except for maybe the energy efficiency language, which we agreed to. Because it allowed for them to do grants, it set up their powers, and it allowed for them to do telephone meetings. I can't imagine it would be any different, but I still think we should set it aside and wait to see if in the next day or so the governor signs a bill. And then we don't have to have it at all.
Yes. Mr. Chairman, I was just checking as to what these bills that have been presented, do you know is anyone following the timetable on?
Well,
the governor has 3 days.
For presentment now, at this point, yes.
Yes.
He vetoed mine pretty fast
today. Oh, I missed that.
The first veto. How about that?
What was it?
Oh, it was a really significant bill. Allowing charter commissions to have $5,000 rather than $1,500. Provision hasn't been changed in 47 years. But apparently the governor's not fond of charter commissions, so he vetoed Representative Lane's bill.
Sounds like a good provision for this bill.
Well, whatever. Anyway, I'd like to hold
like
off on the Sesquicentennial bill that was Representative Loeffler's in mind, and see if we can get any indication from the governor's office that whether he's going to sign it or not before we put it in the show.
Well, and we can. This will give us a time to see if there are any differences between the language that's passed and what.
Yeah, and it was in the other bill. Anyway.
Oh.
Someone with information appears to be approaching.
Welcome to the conference committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you. I'm Michelle Timmons, the reviser of statutes. And Mr. Chairman and members, I believe both of these provisions that Mr. Shepherd just called to your attention were presented today. I recall signing off on both a broader one regarding metropolitan government as well as the Sesquicentennial. So I believe they were both presented today, to the best of my knowledge. Is that that helps.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Collins.
Unless the governor acts quickly, and according to Representative Riss, governor doesn't seem to tally when he makes his mind up, we can, you know, we will have a problem with our deadline. Our deadline is less than the 3 days.
Sure.
So.
Mr. Chairman, but again, it's in a separate bill. I want to hold
okay,
off
so we
on,
want to set it aside.
On that principle anyway.
And if nothing else, at least we can take another look and see if the language that was presented to the governor is actually identical to what's in here.
And we do have, in the Senate bill, a Senate version of 1997, we do have the powers section of Senate File 19, so it's a little bit different than not being addressed in this bill at all from the Senate side.
Okay.
Just as a caveat, but I'd prefer to set it aside.
Okay, Mr. Shepard.
Mr. Chair and members, the next identical language on R73 is from a separate Senate file, Senate File 1073.
So, Mr. Chairman, I would request that be set aside.
Yes.
Please.
Well,
Representative.
Representative, I mean, we are setting aside to okay to look at it, but it looks as if you have the language for the Susquehanna. You have the total language in this bill too, not just from what I see.
This one,
you have the
are we
total
talking about R73 now,
yep.
Madam Chair. I mean,
the
Susquehanna.
Susquehanna. I have to learn how to pronounce it before this session's over. It looks like you have the total number, the total language in this bill too. You have it.
Well, Representative Conner, I'm not sure the Senate added this as we passed the bill in late March. Subsequently, there was a bill that Representative Loeffler and Senator Rest had that passed both bodies, but I don't know that this language was identical to what was in there. The Senate language, I'm sure, is not identical.
But
so, yeah.
I thought that what Representative... Oh, I see. This is an amendment of existing law, so it's the powers section is the only change.
The powers section was added, and so that's why our section 38 is the same as your section 1.
Yeah. Yeah.
But then you also have the energy efficiency stuff that we didn't, it's in the Senate File 1949, but not this one. And then you have the meetings language, which is not in our Senate file here, but it's a little bit different issue than a whole bill that's not in our bill, but still.
All right, well, we'll set it aside.
If we can set it aside.
Oh, I see. Yeah. Oh, the electronic. Okay.
We'll check out what was presented to the governor and make sure that it matches this. Okay, Mr. Shepard?
Mr. Chair, I believe that just a minute ago you said you were going to set aside the language on labor agreements on R73 because that is from a different Senate file.
Right. Yes.
And the next language that's identical, Mr. Chair, is on page R77. This one on the Senate side is section 39. This was in the Senate version. It actually was not in the House version of the omnibus bill, but the language is identical. Other than there's a very small technical change in which the Senate puts all of the language. If you look on page R78, what's identified as a separate section on worker protection on the House bill is just incorporated as a paragraph E on the Senate bill, but I believe they're substantively identical. And this bill did pass the entire House as House File 1048.
Mr. Chairman, on the same principle, until we decide about whether we're going to be putting in bills, whether they're passed in the House and not in the Senate, I think to be fair, we need to put this one aside as well.
No.
Yes.
Okay. Hold off on this one, abolishing doer. Okay, Mr. Shepard.
Mr. Chair and members, the only repealers that are common both relate to bills that pass the separate Senate files, so they would be, as I understand, laid over with the other things you've laid over.
Okay.
And Mr. Chair, the last thing that I'll comment on is Article 3, the best value.
I don't know that everybody has all the pages on that. I was advised that we're missing some language on Article 3. So.
This was passed as a separate Senate file, so right. I assume that you might want to put that aside for now.
Okay.
Well, we don't have it.
I don't know the language is here in the side by side.
We don't have Article 3.
Yeah.
We don't have Article 3.
You're missing pages.
You're missing pages.
Yeah.
Article 3.
Yeah. I've next got Article 4. I don't have Article 3 here, so.
I know, but we don't have it.
Well, we're going to skip over Article 3 anyway because, you know, the House passed as a separate bill, so. The Senate passed it as a separate bill from the House. The House incorporated it in the omnibus bill. I stand corrected. Okay. Where do we go next?
Mr. Chair, I did not summarize anything in the elections articles. There were some Senate provisions that passed, but I did not include that in my table. And I don't have in front of me right now the side-by-side for the Senate articles. And there are a number of Senate bills that have passed that are comparable to House bills, but I don't believe they're shown in the side-by-side.
And I don't know that we're in a position to be tracking down the separately Senate bills, passed Senate bills right here. So, Representative Solberg.
It appears on page R9, right. Article 4, that there's some language that, as we go through it for several pages,
right.
Quite a bit of that's identical, and it must have been included in the Senate
right.
bill in this
particular. We did have, that is correct, Representative Solberg. The only election issue that had funding attached to it in the Senate was the changes in the voter registration of the motor vehicle issues, which was in our Article 2, and so that lines up with what the House adopted into its Article 4. So you are correct that those issues were in the Senate bill that are also in the House bill as well, but there appear to be some differences between the two, and I don't know if we can quickly reconcile them. Representative Solberg?
Mr. Chair, does it deal with, are those fiscal in nature?
Yes. There's a cost to them.
Mr. Chair, are they fiscal in nature?
There are some funding issues, and our Senate counsel, Mr. Watson, is the one who handles this, and I'd probably need him here. He's handling another matter at the moment. There he is. Oh, I didn't see him behind the chair.
Mr.
There
Watson, I... Okay. Mr. Chair, yeah. I would think your Senate counsel should at least have a chair at
sure.
the table.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Solberg, the reason why these provisions, whether they're different from the House or not, were put into the budget bill is because they did have a fiscal impact rather than being policy with no fiscal impact. And maybe Mr. Watson
yep.
could...
Well, are there
differences? Say otherwise if that's the case.
Well, I guess the first question is, are there differences between the House version and the Senate version? There are fiscal issues here. Anybody wish to comment on some of the differences? Mr. Watson, do you?
Mr. Chairman, let me highlight differences between the House and the Senate versions. And if I've missed anything, somebody let me know. But the first one that I recall it's on page R11. It's line 114.10 on the House side and 30.16 on the Senate side. On the House side, it says, if the applicant has not declined, and the Senate says, unless the applicant has declined.
Okay. That would be a difference.
in lieu of not having to come back to hearing that several times, does anyone have an opinion of what's the better language?
Well, why don't we just get an idea of what differences
okay.
we've got, and Mr. Watson.
Mr. Chairman, next on page R12, in subdivision 5 at the top, the effective date, line 115.1 on the House side, 37.1 on the Senate side. The head note on the House side is effective date, mm-hmm. and the head note on the Senate side is registrations dated 20 days or less before okay. election. And the effective date is stated as a separate little paragraph there, whereas on the House side, if you'll turn toward the end of the article, which is, see if I can find the page. Page R35 on the bottom left-hand side of the page, section 65. You'll see that that language on lines 139.24 to 139.28 is the same as the language on that earlier page on the Senate side. So it's just a matter of whether it's located with the section or located at the end of the article. Mr. Chairman, I apologize that with regard to the absentee ballot portions, I haven't actually gone through to see what the differences might be. But
okay.
Perhaps Mr. Shepherd has.
So, Mr. Chair, I would point out just as a procedural point that those absentee ballot provisions passed in a different Senate bill. So I don't know if the Senate wants to hold those over and consider them.
I think I'd better just set some of this aside until we can figure out which direction we're going to be going in on the voter information. I mean, the only thing the Senate had because of the fiscal impact was the motor vehicle registrations things. And I think if we, Mr. Watson, are you saying that those items that you had identified as far as the motor vehicle registration were the only differences between the two?
Mr. Chairman, yes.
Okay, I see. Okay. I would suggest that since it does affect fiscal issues, we keep that in mind. That may be something we choose to do, but on the other hand, as we're discussing fiscal things, we may... I hesitate at the state at this point okay. to adopt something that's going to have a fiscal impact, and then we have to maybe
okay.
back up out of it. So. But at least we recognize that there are relatively minor differences. So, Russ.
So, Mr. Chairman, I'm just trying to understand the issue that was just raised by Mr. Shepherd. So you're saying that the language in the House that starts at 112.5 and the language on R9 and the language that we have at 2810 in the Senate, that the language at 2810 is not from Senate File 1997?
Mr. Chair and Senator Rest, no, I apologize if that was the implication that I gave. I believe that the language on the Senate side, beginning on R9, Section 26, and continuing through the material that Mr. Watson discussed on page R12, all was in Senate File 1997.
In the Senate.
In the Senate. But the beginning on page R13, if you look on the side-by-side, that identifies that as coming from Senate File 2190.
Yes.
And I believe that continues okay. through the rest of the Senate language in this article.
Okay. Got it. Okay.
Chairman,
we'll set it aside. Yeah, we'll set it aside.
Okay.
At least we recognize that there's relatively minor differences in the language that was in both budget bills. So, but it does have a price tag to it. So when we come back to it, we'll just keep that in mind. And
Mr. Lundeen, what was the price tag for the automatic registration, and was that one time or ongoing?
Mr. Lundeen,
thank you. I'd have to go back and check, but what we did was we appropriated the HAVA dollars, and they were going to use this as part of the HAVA dollars, which were one-time dollars for the biennium. But I'll have to double check what were the actual costs, because there were costs to the Secretary of State.
Chairman, for some reason, I thought the automatic registration dollars were separate from the HAVA dollars. That's not the case.
Ms. Roberts, do you have any other additional?
Mr. Chair, I would think the House approach was the same, but we appropriated the HAVA dollars, and my understanding was that the Secretary of State's office would use some of that funding for this.
Okay. Welcome to the conference committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Rest, Beth Fraser with the Secretary of State's office. The fiscal note for the automatic voter registration is just under $1 million, and we were going to use the HAVA funds to pay for that. That goes for programming. There is an ongoing cost of about $15,000 a year that our office is going to find a way to absorb.
Okay. Thank you. We'll get back to it. I think we want to take a look at all the HAVA dollars and everything as one issue to decide what we're going to be doing here. So we'll set it aside and come back to it. So, is there anything else that was in both bills that we need to look at? That we can look at.
Mr. Chair, when I organized this material, I did one table on language that Mr. Bodern and I believe to be identical or nearly identical. We've completed that. I had, if you turn the page, there's another table that where we identified items that the House and the Senate have similar topics, but substantive differences. These are not identical. Okay. And so I don't know if you want to go through those.
Well, that's just this one page here, because after this,
no.
Looks like...
That's correct, just the one page.
One page. Well, okay, let's go through the one page here, so... At least get a flavor for what we've got that are different. Okay, go ahead.
Mr. Chair and members, these items are all in Article 2,
Article 2.
The thickest of your side-by-sides. And the first item is on begins on page R2 and continues over to page R3. On the House side, the House creates...
What article is that in now?
Article 2, Senator Rest.
Article 2 of the House. Is that what you're saying?
Well, the side-by-sides, it's...
They're both Article 2.
Mr. Chairman, this is a brand-new way of doing side-by-sides, and it's pretty confusing for me right now until I get used to it.
Well,
for me,
okay.
It's brand-new.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, I'm working off the... there's the thickest of the side-by-side documents... contains Article 2 from both bills, and it's labeled at the top Article 2 of state government. And on page R, at the bottom of page R2 of that document, are the two provisions that on the House side it creates an office on ethnic heritage and new Americans. The Senate side creates the Minnesota Commission on New Americans. That's one difference. There are also differences. The House has 14 members. The Senate has 10. The Senate, if you flip over to page R3, has some language beginning on page 41, line 41.14 through 41.23 that has a variety of qualifications relating to having members with business experience and business executives. Those are the main thematic differences between the House and the Senate provisions.
Okay. Why don't we, unless anybody wants further discussion on this, we can move on to the other differences. Okay. What's next?
Mr. Chair, the next differences actually are quite, they're close to identical.
Okay.
There are two sections. They both relate to appropriation of fees to the legislative auditor. The House has two statutory appropriations that would give permanent appropriations to the legislative auditor. One is on the bottom of R4, page lines 24.15 through 24.23. This adds to the appropriation for the legislative auditor the fees that the auditor receives for auditing metropolitan commissions. And a related provision is back on page R36. At the bottom left of the House side there, this relates to audits of the state fair. And again, it would create an ongoing statutory appropriation of the fees that the auditor receives to the state auditor. The reason I say these are similar, even though there's no Senate provisions on either of these, is that the concept is similar. The Senate actually appropriates money for these functions to the legislative auditor for this biennium only. And so the difference is the Senate does it just for this biennium. The House would do it permanently. The Senate, because it is just appropriating the money for this biennium, shows this in the appropriations at the beginning of Article 1, where the appropriations are made.
And either way, I mean, both of us, I guess, recognize that the legislative auditor needs additional funds. Either way, there's a loss to the general fund of $125 million if the way that was suggested. But either way, if the fees are paid to the legislative auditor as opposed to the general fund, or if we take the money out of the general fund and give it to the legislative auditor, the balance is still the same. I think the Senate approach was simply that we didn't want to create the perception that the auditor was auditing for a fee, and they wanted to avoid that as well too. So we took a bit of a different approach, but it's in the end the net effect is roughly the same, except we don't have the ongoing money. We put it in the base. We put it in the base, so it's not a one time. Senator Russ.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I was just going to mention that, and also it sends a different message with regard to the auditor having clients as opposed to having an obligation. And the I think the way the Senate does it, it sets it up as an obligation and a requirement, and then we just pay the money from these groups directly to the auditor from the general fund, and I think speaks more to the independence of the legislative auditor than having the actual fees go right to his office.
We don't have to resolve this issue at the moment, because that's something that the Senate is going to be discussing when we make a presentation to the House in a little while. So, but just we want to understand the differences here between the two. Okay. Other things that we should be looking at here?
Well, while it's in front of us, if I can just ask a question.
Sure.
How do you, I understand the philosophy between, on what you're doing, but what bothers me a little bit is that the numbers is likely to change each year. So how do you deal? And I know, you can appropriate a different amount each year, but it's in a sense it's after the fact.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Kahn, I think maybe we want the result to be the same, and perhaps we could ask the legislative auditor if there have been changes in those fees over the years, or if this is just the way, if this has been pretty common, the fee that they've been charging for the last several audits and whatever. So we can get that information. It might make a difference on how we want to do it.
Okay. Any further questions on this particular issue? As I say, this will be part of a proposal. But Mr. Shepard, do you have that set up?
Mr. Chair, the next group of similar issues is similar in concept. It's on page R19 at the top of the page, House Section 38 on the left and Senate Section 7 on the right. And this is a similar issue with fees charged to state public entities by the CAP board. The House appropriates the fees only for the current biennium, and the Senate appropriates them permanently on an ongoing basis. So similar issue to the last one.
Okay.
Different result.
So, Russ.
How much is that?
It's not exactly true, I think, that it's, Mr. Chairman, that it's similar, because we're not appropriating an amount assuming what the fees will be. We just have a limit. We're both doing the same thing. And the CAP board is very different from the legislative board.
No, I agree.
So we're doing the same thing. It's just that you're doing it permanently, we're doing it for the biennium.
So how much is it, is what I'm asking, Mr. Chairman? Mr. Lundy.
Mr. Lundy.
It's the estimate is about $8,000 a year.
Mr. Chair.
Per year.
Representative Holberg.
you will probably see throughout this when we talk about the appropriations of funds, similar language that the House has on 38.8. What we did as it came through Finance and Ways and Means was a provision, particularly in finance, was a philosophy or a provision that we said we wanted to be able to review the appropriations and not have them ongoing most of the time. And so you will see the language that when we do, even though you deposit in a special revenue fund on an appropriation of fiscal years in 08 and 09, automatically brings it back to the legislature then in the following to be able to look at that special revenue fund and do the appropriations, as opposed to and you're probably accomplishing the same thing, except if you make an appropriation, but in the Senate, you put it in a special revenue fund and it's appropriated to the board, and you never see it anymore after that. And so you've done. We didn't do that in the legislative audit one. Somehow or another, we missed it, or there may be a special case. But in throughout that, we tried to get the legislative back, and not just have the agencies be able to spend the money, and never have the legislature have a look to see what's being happened to it. So that's why the language is important for us. On page 38.8.
Yeah. So Representative Solberg, then how did you book the money, for instance, for the cap? Was it considered as one-time money, or was it ongoing money?
It's probably ongoing money.
Okay.
But it's not appropriated until they get appropriated. It's in deposited in a special revenue fund, but it has to be appropriated by the legislature. We have to look and see whether or not they're spending the money.
Representative Conn?
Chairman, that's not exactly true. Because we deposit it, and then it's appropriated. It's not appropriated by the legislature. It just goes right out of the fund. The difference is that in the House, as we've done several times, we're only doing that for the existing biennium. So we have to look at it at the next time. But it's not the same as something that gets into a fund and then has to be appropriated out by the legislature. The only difference, the Senate, if you look at the language,
I think in order for it to come out of the, Mr. Chair, in order for it to come out of the fund in the next bienniums,
yes,
it has to be looked at by the legislature.
Okay. Yes. In the next biennium, we would either have to put the same language in for the next biennium, or we'd have to look at it. And the Senate would just go out with that.
That's right. So,
but in this biennium, it's the same.
It's the same. That's correct.
Senator Rest.
So, Mr. Chairman, on the spreadsheet, how is this item carried differently in the House and in the Senate? What does it look like? How is it different?
Mr. Chair and Senator Rest, I am showing it as one-time funding on for the House.
For the House side. Yes. Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay, the next item then of similar but different.
Mr. Chair and members, on page R, there's a cluster of language relating to the Office of Grant Management. I'll just point out that they're very similar, and there are some technical differences that I think can easily be resolved, but the substantive differences are on page R25 of the side-by-side, and they happen to be right next to each other. But on House side, page R25, line 44.21 to 44.22, that language is not in the Senate. And on the Senate side, if you notice, the Senate has clauses 9, 10, and 11, whereas the House is limited to 8 clauses on its side. So Senate clauses 9, 10, and 11 on lines 19.35 to 20.3, I believe, are not in the House language.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Rust.
Mr. Shepard, when the this is the executive branch language that we adopted and put in the bill, and I'm assuming that you all did the same. Was this language that was on the House side that was deleted for some reason, or we didn't make, as far as I recall, maybe wordsmithing change here or there, but otherwise we left it as presented by the Department of Administration because it was so thorough. So is does anybody know why it's not the not almost the same?
Maybe the department can comment on that. Why?
And what is preferred?
Welcome to the conference committee, and Commissioner, please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Dana Badgerow, Commissioner of Administration. Senator Rest, the language having to do with selectively auditing grants, as I recall, and I think I can state, was as a result of Senator Moy's proposed bill, which was really responsive to the legislative auditor, who really would like for this office to be more involved in auditing grants. We aren't staffed to do that, nor are we funded under this scheme here, under these bills. But had to put a plug in there. we're more than willing to do selective audits and to certainly oversee agency audits. We think that auditing of grants ought to be part of the standard process, and we'll oversee that to make sure it happens.
So, Mr. Chairman, just for the House members in particular, what the Senate did was to add language that reflected the three different people in the Senate that were working on this bill or on the grants management process, Senator Gerlach, Senator Moy, and myself. And we rolled in that language by amendment that represented the work, the response to the legislative auditor's report. So it's probably the House language that is the original stuff, and then the Senate language represents an amendment to what the administration had offered. Is that correct, Commissioner?
Yes, Mr. Chair, Senator.
Except now the House has two lines the Senate does not have, 44.21 and 44.22. Was that something that the Senate deleted, or was it added?
No, that was... Mr. Chairman, that was Ed in the House. That was a suggestion, actually, of Representative Genius, who's very concerned about the similarity of easements to grants, but the lack of any kind of oversight of even knowing what they are.
Commissioner, as long as we've got you here, do you have any thoughts or preferences between the two? We've got almost identical language, but we've got some differences here. Does your department, your agency, have any thoughts on them?
Well, Mr. Chair and members, we really, the Drive to Excellence Project did not envision that this office would be in the audit business. And it was only because of the legislative auditor's findings that highlighted the need for a more consistent audit, which we're more than willing to try to assist with to the extent that we have staff and funds to do it.
Right here. Okay.
With respect to the easements, Mr. Chair, I might say I don't have... It is a provision with which I'm not familiar, and I haven't really studied what additional effort might be required to oversee easements.
Okay. Perhaps if you could, your staff could take a look at that soon, we would appreciate that. So, Senator Rest.
So, Mr. Chairman, again, what is the House carrying the cost of this, of the grants management process at?
Ms. Roberts.
And... for some reason, we do have different head notes, too. I don't know why that's there. Is it a separate line?
Mr. Chair and Senator Russ, the House is carrying $125,000 in one-time funding from the general fund for this office. There is also language...
Is that for the technology, though, or is that for... the website, or is that for the process itself?
Ms. Roberts.
Mr. Chair and Senator Russ, the one-time funding is to establish this Office of Grants Management. Mm-hmm. And then for the ongoing funding, there's language in the House bill that requires the commissioner to deduct, beginning in the second year of the planning, the funding from the grants that are made by the state. And that's where the funding would come from to continue the operation of the office.
And, Mr. Chairman, that's, I understand that the grantee community is not particularly thrilled with that approach. Just the Council for Nonprofits, I think, maybe has contacted people. What do you carry, Mr. Chairman, ma'am, for the website development, which is in your bill, not in ours?
The website development? Okay.
Yep.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, Senator Ross, the House is carrying $50,000 in one-time funding for the website.
Commissioner?
Yes. The Chairman?
Representative Kahn.
I'd like to make a comment on the comments that we've all been getting, I am sure, for the grantees mm-hmm. about how they're not thrilled with this.
Mm-hmm.
Just to point out what we're talking about. We're looking at the amount, looking at the total number of grants that we give out, we're looking at amounts that would be about the equivalent of $13 on a $100,000 grant. And I assume that anyone who's been to the legislature for one day to lobby for a grant mm-hmm. spent a lot more than $13 mm-hmm. on it. And so, you know, I'm a tax and spend liberal, so mm-hmm. I don't object to just spending general fund money on all these things. But we have a very tight target, and if we want to do an activity like this, it seemed like a really simple arithmetic way to doing it instead of, you know, if we're funding it from the general fund, we're going to say that all grants are cut back by
right.
an amount that's equivalent to that. Well, this is a much easier way of doing it.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Kahn, I don't especially disagree with you at all. I just think it's an issue that this is where... This is the process about which those concerns are being raised, and I wondered what the commissioner, the $50,000 for the website, is that adequate? And was that your fiscal note?
Mr. Chair, Member Senator Rest, I believe the last time this committee met, the fiscal note had not been finalized, and I believe it now has. And I'm looking at actually two different fiscal notes. It must be the language is slightly different. This is for the searchable database
mm-hmm.
For grants and contracts. And the fiscal note with respect to the Senate side is $206,000, and on the House side it's $217,000. There's the setup of the website. Then there is additional programming that has to mm-hmm. be done to connect the website to our existing map system, which, as we've testified in other hearings, is not intuitive nor web-based. And then there is a cost of maintaining it to ensure that the database is kept up by all agencies.
Mr. Chairman, I didn't think we had it in our bill, the searchable database. I thought we just had the grants process.
Mr. Chair, and Senator Rest, I'm sorry, it's actually Senate file 416, yeah, for which you're the
bill.
Mm-hmm. Different bill.
Mr. Chair. Mr. Solberg. Page R25. Lines 4418 to 4420, it says the commissioner may determine that it is cost-effective for agencies to develop and use shared grant management technology systems. Is that what we're talking about with the website?
Commissioner.
Mr. Chair and Representative Solberg, it is not. The portion of this bill, which I believe originated, well, that we've had several authors, but a representative Paulson, I believe, was the primary author, calls for a searchable database so that citizens can understand what grants and contracts have historically been granted, so they can understand and have access to it. It's a truth in government kind of approach. We would not go back a number of years, but we would start the database, and therefore going forward, citizens, interested members of the public and press could understand what contracts have been awarded, what grants have been awarded. What we are talking about, very similar to grants.gov, which is a wonderful federal website that lets the nonprofit community know what grants are available, and it's a one-stop shop for understanding the availability of grants, applying for the grants, understanding the processes around grants, and that kind of database, which has been now implemented in the state of Pennsylvania, is something we think would be a real asset both to our state agencies and to the nonprofit community, but it is different.
Mr. Chair, what is the cost associated with that? I know it says may, but if you did it, what would the cost be?
Mr. Chair, Representative Solberg, the Drive to Excellence team estimated it would be in the vicinity of $3 million. Now, bear in mind that state agencies are today investing that much and more in various grant management systems, so we would have no further investments in those agency-specific systems, so there would be a cost avoidance. But there would be a down payment or a downstroke of $3 million to attain that system, we estimate. We would have to, of course, get private sector involvement to understand what it would really cost.
Mr. Chairman, can you give me, so you'd be taking from some agencies budget to do this? Is that what you're saying? You'd be transferring this?
Mr. Chair and Representative Silberg, the intent was under the Drive to Excellence project was that we would get this grants office up and running, we would get our processes standardized, we would have some systematized activities, we would have some outreach, and as part of this first 2 years, we would assess what kind of system would really be useful, what's doable, what's affordable, and we would be back in 2 years with a request for an appropriation if no other funding source was available.
But, Mr. Chair, the starting of the grants agreement and so forth, that's Section 49, is it not? I mean, all of that isn't that just starting of your grants agreement, but I'm specifically looking at 44.18-20. Because that's not in the Senate bill, and it is in the House, and I'm wondering why. Where do I see it in the Senate?
Well, Mr. Chairman.
Well, it's down below.
Mr. Chairman, the website with the searchable database is on R30, and then they would be directed to do the sharing. And if they must set up the website, they may do the sharing on those lines, and we don't have either one of them. So that's why it's not in the Senate bill, or at least not in 1997.
Yeah. Representative Wakeman.
Mr. Chair, Commissioner Badgerow, as I'm trying to understand this, it seems like in the House side, 44.16 and 17, it says provide a single listing of all available competitive grant opportunities. And then we have 44.18 through 44.20, which would be to create a $3 million management system, essentially, of that. And then the third alternative is Representative Paulson's website idea to provide an online tool to the nonprofit community. It seems to me those are all three different versions of the same concept, just providing a single point of entry for people with varying degrees of robustness, as it were. Could you provide it? And one is, this one has apparently very little fiscal implication, 44, 16, and 17. Even though you're required to create a single list, then you move to $200,000 for a website, and then $3 million for sort of the fully built system. Are there three options we're considering? Is it duplicative?
Commissioner Basil.
Mr. Chair and Representative Wakeberg, let me just stress that the searchable database is historical. This will be grants and contracts that are already awarded. It will not be grant opportunities. So again, this will be after the competitions have been held. The list of award grants, both in contracts, and we have that currently in the MAP system, but not in a way that is coherent or in a searchable database. That's the $200,000 would create that. But it is historical. What we're talking about here are available grants in advance of their having been awarded. And the single list would not be web-based. It would be simply available in whatever format, Excel spreadsheet or other paper form that we're able to compile, but would not be really readily available to the citizenry or to nonprofits. Nor would it be searchable on keywords or by subject. It will be that, just a list.
Representative Winkler?
And Mr. Chair, Commissioner Badger, I guess my suggestion would be that it's very cheap to take a Excel spreadsheet and link it to a website and make that a searchable database, and it's pretty frequently done. So, I'm just trying to kind of understand the trade-offs here. And over time, you could accumulate the kind of historic knowledge in that same database. It wouldn't be retrospective, but the $50,000 could accomplish much of what we're talking about here, it seems to me.
Commissioner?
Mr. Chair, I think the programming alone is 50. The maintenance of the website then is in addition to that. But I just want to continue to stress, I don't mean to beat a dead horse here, but they really serve way two different purposes. And if I could just make a plug here, you know that when we get the new replacement for the MAP system, which will be web-based, and will have user-friendly access to what we are doing in contracts and grants, at least on a historical basis, we would obviate the requirement for this searchable database. So if we can hold on and be patient, we will have a searchable database for contracts and grants at the time of the MAPS replacement without any further investment.
Thank you. Any other questions of Commissioner Badgerow? Representative Kahn.
Tim, if we're going to do, and obviously that's an issue that's under contention in this conference, if we're going to do the MAP system, we could then just put this as an addendum to the development of the MAP system and make it contingent on that without additional cost, if we do.
Mr. Chair and Representative Kahn, I would strongly recommend that.
And the new MAPs is about $54 million?
Mr. Chair, that's the current estimate.
There you go.
There you go.
Phase one.
Convenient number.
Okay. Any other questions? Thank you, Commissioner. Any other questions on grant management? If not, next up would be voluntary unpaid leave of absences. It looks quite similar, but differences as to ongoing or one time, right?
Yes, Mr. Chair, and Mr. Bodden just pointed out to me that the Senate today dealt with this issue in Senate File 1236. The House had amended it slightly. The Senate concurred and repassed the bill today. So if the governor signs that bill, which was actually part of the Doer housekeeping bill, Senate File 1236, then we're on page R40, Mr. Chair. That bill provides for voluntary unpaid leaves of absence at 1040 hours to continue in the upcoming biennium. The House position on page R40, section 76, would be to make this voluntary unpaid leave of absence permanent. I believe the language the Senate agreed to today actually amended the codified law, but did so to just include the next biennium.
Right, that was a housekeeping bill and it was uncodified. That's correct. So is the language that we have in the Senate side identical to what passed today? The Senate adopted the House language. Is that
Chairman?
Mr. Butter.
The language the Senate passed today or accepted from the House is actually a third version of this. It is temporary but codified.
Okay. Well, perhaps we can at least get take a look at it. Now, obviously, the governor will not have received... I don't think we'll have received this bill before we close up this bill, so I think we probably need to take a look at what both bodies have passed and perhaps look at including the language that we've already passed in both bodies into this bill.
Mr. Chairman, what was the Senate file for those of us who want to
look it
up, or the House file?
Mr. Chairman?
Mr. Bonner?
It was Senate File 1236, and the Senate accepted the House amendment.
Sam Michelle had it. It came back from the House with some amendments.
1236?
Right. Yes, it was a Senate file. The House amended it and came back, and we accepted it today. So if we could maybe take a look at what it is that we've all both passed and see how it's different from what's here. And I think we should consider putting in this bill just to make sure. Looking at Tom?
Well, Mr. Chairman, what we both passed in that separate bill is more similar to what the Senate has in this bill. I never understood the argument for not making it permanent. Seems to me it's a really sensible way to control costs, and we've been doing it every year for I don't know how long, and I did raise it in the Government Operations Committee. I don't remember if it came to the vote, to a vote in RAS and lost, but I still think it should be permanent.
Well,
yeah.
Mr. Chairman?
Sir, Russ.
In the bill that went to, or that it's on its way to the governor, was it one time, or, I mean, every biennium, or just one biennium?
Just codified, but just the existing biennium. And I didn't understand. I mean, the author of the bill in the Government Operations Committee accepted the argument from Doer that you want to look at this every biennium, and, you know, you want to use it as a tool. But I frankly think it's a very useful permanent tool.
I agree.
I understand. When you have someone who wants to be off and you have the department who wants to let them off, why you wouldn't do that? You know, I assume that people, and I frankly think that people are willing, we ought to fix it in this bill and assume that this bill will be signed later than the other bill, and if it's signed at some point, it's signed.
You're that hopeful,
that will
huh?
Be it. So, whatever.
Well, okay. We'll find out. Okay.
Mr. Chairman, what I'm just saying is I think this committee ought to make the decision that it should be permanent, but I am pointing out that that's contrary to the decision that
both bodies
and the department has made. I just think that they're uninformed and they ought to agree with this one.
And the argument we make on the floor of our respective bodies is what?
We knew better.
Okay.
I was a minor part of this bill, and when you're at the final
we got
point...
We had more recent information.
Okay. Okay. Next item, veterans as a targeted group, R35.
Mr. Chair, on the House side there, this has to do with designation of targeted groups for state purchasing and state contracting. The House side limits veterans who have served in federal active service in support of Operation Enduring Freedom or Operation Iraqi Freedom. The Senate side has a broader provision that applies to all veterans.
And this is a separate bill, too. Yeah.
And who, Mr. Chairman, who's, or counsel, whose bill is that in the Senate?
Senator Roebling, I think it was. Worgen. Senator Worgen. It was heard in the state government.
Right.
Right. Senator Worgen had that bill.
Okay.
Early.
Thank you.
We'll hold that. Okay. Domestic partners. I recall this one. R37 and R39.
Well, Mr. Chairman, this is something that the governor has...
issues.
He has some concerns with. Mm-hmm. I will point out that there is a difference between, although the governor didn't seem to pick up on it, there is a difference between the House and the Senate bill in that the House language has no reference to same-sex partners.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm actually working on the House, you know, obviously I think we're going to set this aside, but I will point out to members that the House is working on an amendment that we didn't except when it was first proposed to us by Representative Emmer, which we would like to keep referring to as the Emmer provision, which actually would, instead of picking out just... and part of the Emmer provision was actually incorporated when the same-sex reference was done, but it's the idea of having a significant individual that people can point out, can choose a significant individual. And I think the problems in writing it, and I've asked for some help in writing it, and we're looking at some jurisdictions in which this is done, is to make sure that we're not blowing the cost sky high. So to do that, either take the Senate provision of paying for it, or specifically, I think what we don't want someone who's would be entitled, right now a person can only have a spouse and dependent children. We don't want someone to dump the spouse because the spouse can get insurance from somewhere else and pick up a very aged grandmother or something like that, mm-hmm. and put that in instead. So I'm interested in rewriting this in a way similar to what Representative Emmer has suggested. But putting controls on it.
Well, we'll be happy to take a look at some ideas here. The Senate, of course, had to move a little earlier on getting the bill out, but it was only when the bill was actually getting to the Finance Committee on the floor that we received the fiscal note, and we heard the concerns that there were going to be significant costs to the agencies if we did this. That's why I offered the amendment on the Senate floor to have the domestic partners purchase it at their own cost, and figured, well, that takes care of the issue of concern, and apparently it did not, because they said, well, we still have some concerns. So I don't know how we can approach it now, but that's why I'm interested in seeing what you have, so we can see if we can find some way that we can work our way, because we both bodies have expressed an interest in doing something here to provide health insurance. Neither one seems to have gotten us there, so let's hold this one and see what else we can come forward with. Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Representative Emmer would thank Representative Mulry for his contributions to the Emmer provision as well. Representative Emmer said he used Representative Mulry's language on that. But in any event, if it's adopted, it would be the Emmer proviso.
Yes, yes.
But
I thought, Mr. Chairman,
Representative Khan,
I thought if we put it into the bill, we actually ought to call it, you know, similar to the Tennyson disclosure, call it the Emmer provision.
Yeah.
I think would help it along.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Obviously, Mr. Chairman, Representative Kahn, this is a major concern of the governor. He does have some serious difficulties with this. I would encourage you to talk with members of his office to see if there is any way that there can be any resolution.
And I'm sure the governor would like to make sure people have health insurance. I think that's an issue he's concerned about. So we're more than happy to have discussions and find out what we can get there. So.
But
Representative
Kahn. Mr. Chairman, Representative Erdahl, if you're in contact with the governor, you ought to tell him before he sends a letter of complaint about what's in the bills, you ought to read the House bill first.
Okay. Okay, we'll hold off on domestic partners. Next is Genetic Information Work Group, pages R69 and R80.
Mr. Chair, the reason that I listed these as similar topics but substantive differences, on R69 on the House side, line 79.2, 79.3, the House extends the reporting date for this group to 2009, and on R80, the Senate repeals this group.
Mr. Chairman.
Well, let's see. Compromise. Senator Russ.
Mr. Chairman, does this one of the reasons why we went through and did these things because these groups, some groups, cleaned house on because they never meet or they've never been appointed, or and I was wondering what the status of this one is. Does such a group exist?
Representative Kahn.
Well.
And which commissioners refer to
here? Mr. Chairman, it's the Commissioner of Administration. And what happened was that there was a group that actually did meet and come in with a report. And it's a very serious issue of the privacy of DNA mm-hmm. information, which mm-hmm. is an issue that I think we need to be proactive on before the courts become very proactive on it. And what happened was that this was language that I think it came from the House, and it was passed in the Judiciary Public Safety Bill that last year that set this up. Apparently it was never appointed because of the cost implication, and that's why, and the repealer was in the administration's bill for this,
mm-hmm.
was in the governor's bill for this department. The reason for the repealer was because the funding wasn't available. So we mm-hmm. just took the fiscal note of what the funding was going to be, which in terms of some of the other things that we're doing, and we could discuss what the fiscal note should be and what we thought the importance of this topic is, and just funded it for what the Department of Administration asked for.
And Mr. Chairman,
they would set up these things.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Kahn, how much funding are you carrying it for?
$89,000.
And this group made a report this year by January 1st, or they didn't do anything?
No, they didn't. They didn't do anything, and this was, and the reason was...
But they did meet.
Sure.
No, there was a group that met before that, and this is what that group... There was a group that met for free, actually.
The best
which I was part of, and a lot of other people who were working on this issue, and they passed a report which had a lot of future recommendations. And this language that was passed just put the future recommendations into law. Actually, what happens is that the law is kind of left. And that's... So there was the part that was law, and then there was the part that was future work. But the law was... The part that's law was left, but the future work was taken off because of the fiscal implications. And we didn't... Mm-hmm. I mean, one could discuss what could be done for less than $89,000. But again, I feel fairly strongly that this is something that the legislature needs to be proactive on.
Okay. The last one on this, similar but substantive difference, is electronic documents. This is a bill I was carrying the Senate, Representative Thiessen had in the House. Does anybody want to just comment on the differences between the two?
Mr. Chair, I would just note that there are a number of differences in the, and while they look sort of nuanced, in the House Governmental Operations Committee there was extensive debate and discussion of these. For example, whether the study should include electronic documents or all government data was a point of significant discussion, and there was so I would not characterize this at all, any of these differences, as just technical. There was a lot of discussion on these, and I'd be happy to walk through it in more detail if you'd like, or if you wanted to.
It's quite a complex topic, but I believe the Senate did not put any funding into it. It was a study, and the House has some money behind the study. Is that what, am I correct there? Apparently the House has $68,000. The Senate has nothing for the study. So, okay.
Chairman, obviously, I think we're going to set this aside.
Yes.
It's an issue that I would be comfortable having worked out between you and Representative Thiessen, maybe in front of this committee. But that would be the first place I would suggest to at least work out to work out the language.
We'll see what we can do.
We would meet with him and do that.
Sure. For free. I don't know that we would have the time to go all through all the non-comparable provisions, but if there's anything that has any fiscal impacts, direct fiscal impacts, I'd like to identify them, and I'll mention two or three that are on the Senate side, simply because this is going to have a reflection on the proposal that we will be making. We are proposing to put a limit on deputy assistant commissioners, and I'll have counsel explain that in a minute. But this is an issue that is just, although it's being carried in this bill, actually affects other budget areas within the Senate. And so the Senate is tracking it through this bill, but it's not just the agencies that we have oversight within this bill, but others. And perhaps, Mr. Bobber, would you be in a position to discuss the Senate position here?
Mr. Chairman, in a nutshell, what the Senate position does is removes the authorization for assistant commissioners across all state agencies and allows each agency to retain one deputy commissioner to the extent that authorization is already provided in law. There's a long string of sections. Don't have that list immediately at hand, but I can refer you to...
If you have, on this topic, R18, 20, 37, it's just a lot, and a lot, many times the language doesn't quite tell you which agency we're referring to, because it's part of that agency's chapter, so I think we probably have to provide a list of showing which agencies we're talking about here. Mr. Rodder, which one?
Mr. Chairman, I can separately provide that list. I think it's basically not going to, it's as you described, without reference to the particular chapter that you're in, you're not going to understand which agency is being referred to because of the coding. And then I will point out that there is language in Article 1 that basically reserves the savings from the removal of the assistant and deputy commissioner positions.
And I wish I would have captured it in the bill the Senate was carrying, but it is, the money isn't here. It was used for other bills, so I had to carry the luggage for others. But Representative Kahn.
Well, Mr. Chairman, the House took a slightly different tactic on this. I think we came back to the same fiscal savings, but we gave much more flexibility to the executive on deciding what they were going to do. We decided at some point a certain number that we were going to cut that would result in a certain saving, and decided that they could they would decide where they wanted to do it.
Mr. Chairman, just so you can have that in front of you, that's on the last page of the Article 1 side by side on R26. On the House side, you'll see Section 30 there. And that basically just gives the governor discretion to decide which deputy commissioners and assistant commissioners, so on and so forth, would have to be eliminated in order to provide those savings. And the Senate side is Section 32, linking directly to the changes in Article 2.
Okay, so that's on Article 1, R25.
R26.
Thank you. Now, the limit on additional unclassified positions, is that...
those are set of positions. Does that tie into this issue as well, too?
Mr. Chairman, that was part of the original amendment that added that. Yeah, it was taken together with that, and I will. I think you'll find that on R39, section 17 on the Senate side. Limits the use, I believe this is what you're referring to, limits the use of temporary unclassified positions, just provides an effective time limit for that. Since they are described as temporary, it's limited to 18 months.
One other thing that would have a direct state impact of the Budget Trend Study Commission, that's not in the House. This is something that was added in the Senate Finance Committee. Maybe you could discuss what that is, since that has a fiscal issue.
Mr. Chairman, you'll find the language for that on R78 and R79 of Article 2. Basically, that's I can describe it briefly for you. It's a 15 public member commission analyzing state demographic trends, looking forward in time to the effect demographic trends will have on state revenues, I believe, as far out as the next 25 years.
Mr. Chair. President Tolbert.
A similar bill, but not quite as prescriptive, is in the Ways and Means Committee. I think there are two, one by Representative Lynn Chesky and one by Representative Bunn, that at least will require the department to give some kind of a report as they do their fiscal planning on demographic trends as well and how they may affect the fiscal outlook. It is far less prescriptive than this. It gives a responsibility to the Department of Finance, I think, to do that, similar to what we have them do the forecasting.
And the Senate has I think the companion bills, one of them is carried by Senator Michel. He's mentioned that to me, showed me the language, so it's within our system. It didn't bubble its way through the process, though. So you know, it's out there somewhere too. And so, you know, perhaps we can discuss it. If the Senate hasn't taken a position on it, but if the House is willing to discuss it, you know, we can certainly bring it forward.
Mr. Chair, we haven't taken a position on it either. But
okay.
Before Ways and Means, it'll probably be heard later on.
Okay.
Mr. Chair,
Senator Olsen.
I'm struggling with, you know, when we're talking about the reduction of commissioner, deputy commissioners and assistants, because I feel like we're getting a mixed message from the governor, because we did receive a letter expressing his concerns about that, but yet your speech on the floor talking about the governor's concern with school districts having assistant commissioners and assistant commissioners and assistant commissioners and his concern about that. And then when I'm seeing him writing us a letter, when we're looking at proposing something similar for his budget, that he doesn't like that. So, you know, I was a school board member for 10 years, and I feel that, you know, school districts use, you know, assistants very similar to, I suspect, the governor does. So that's one thing I'm struggling with this, that he sends us a letter saying that that's a concern for him. I guess I just wanted to say that.
Well, as I mentioned that many of us were rather busy last year. I didn't get a lot of chance to watch a lot of television. I heard about the ad. I think I read about the newspaper. But I think that if there's a desire to have the school districts eliminate overhead, we should apply the same principle to state government as well. Representative Conn?
Well, Mr. Chairman, looking at the governor's letter on that section, specifically, he put, I guess there are a bunch of, there's a chunk of language in there which came from various bills on heights. He sort of lumps a whole bunch of things of impeding on the executive branch, and he has a whole bunch of issues on setting arbitrary mandates regarding the budget and the legislative process, preliminary budget and legislative draft proposals. Some of those actually came from, this is a combination of things, from a bill of Representative Solberg, from an issue that was done by Representative Loeffler, and Representative Tingelstad had a commission that worked on that in the House. And I guess I need to know specifically what the governor what the governor objected to. Like, I think that some of these things that we may be missing that were in the House bill and not in the Senate bill were bills that came directly from the Commissioner of Administration, at least from one of the assistant commissioners, Jim Rhodes, that, you know, we putting in this bill, these were things that the administration wanted done. We didn't get the bills until like a week before our deadline, well after your finance committee deadline, although I don't know who has them. I don't know where they are in the Senate. I don't know if someone has them in the Senate. And it just seemed to me, it seems to us that administration bills that the you know, that aren't responding to an emergency that's just come, that there ought to be some way that we get them earlier and in a more orderly progress so we can decide whether they're going in this bill, whether they're going to be separate bills and that kind of thing. So I guess I'd like this paragraph that we all have in the that impede on executive branch authority and leadership. I guess I'd like some more details from the governor about what specifically he objects to in both bills. Of it is stuff I think we're set aside.
Well, Representative Conn, of course, we have a governor, we have a House, we have a Senate, we all have roles to play, and we certainly welcome the input from the administration, and frankly, if the governor even wants to stop by and say hi to us sometime, we welcome that, wouldn't we? But we would. We truly would. We'd be honored to have that. No, we would. So I'll tell you what. Now I recognize that the House has many items that it you know has, and obviously there will be opportunities, I believe, to review that. But I wanted to hit the Senate fiscal issues only because we would like to circulate a list of things that we would like to have the House consider, given the guidance that we had, given the targets that we've had, given the requirement we've had. And I wonder if that can be made available now and passed out. We have a list, and there are a couple of things, and I'll have our council go through the list. There's a few things that I think we can resolve even this evening, but I recognize that the House is going to need some time to review this and have a counter offer, and we expect and anticipate that, but we try to put our best guess in putting a list together. Now, recognizing that when we made our budget targets, we had a much higher target for the salary supplement. We did not have as high a target on the tax compliance. And so what wound up happening was that there are some things that we thought were good ideas we just couldn't fund. Given the fact that we now have a lower salary supplement than what the Senate was working off of and a higher tax compliance money based on the House's numbers, we tried to look at some of the things that we heard, some of the same bills you heard, and tried to say, well, what are some of our priorities? Where can we fund them? And that is what the sheet represents. Now, this is only just our first cut at it, a look at it. I'll ask Mr. Lundin to kind of walk us through the offer sheet, and if there's copies available, they'll be, you know, just go in an orderly manner. And this is not the final bill, folks. This is just something that we're looking at. But Mr. Lundin, could you start walking through it and tell us what is in here? So.
Yeah. Yes, there, you should have a two-page document, actually. I think it's both sides. Mm-hmm. And so the way I put this together is I've taken the Senate positions and the House positions and then compared them to the Senate offer with the numbers, the one-time numbers, and then the ongoing numbers. The first item is the compensation, and I think as was discussed earlier, the agreement was that there should be a 3% compensation adjustment. So that $14.5 million is representing that for all state agencies. I have not included the legislature in that compensation adjustment number there at the top. As you move down, we get to the legislative offices. The first is the Senate. There was a Senate operating ongoing funds. That's the $5.4 million that's showing up. The Senate had a technology request. That's one-time dollars of almost $3.3 million. And then the House operating budget is ongoing of $5.7 million in the 8 and 9 biennium, and also a technology request of $3.6 million. Moving down is the legislative auditor. This was the issue that we were talking about with the audits. The Senate appropriated the money directly to the legislative auditor. The next item is the Legislative Coordinating Commission's operating budget. And this is slightly larger than the amount that the House had put in. Apparently there was a agreement that we had been told about to add some additional dollars into the LCC operating budget. And this is encompassing all of the budgets for all of the offices there. Next, moving down, the Senate has put some money into the New Americans Commission. This was Senator Rest's bill. We originally did not have funding in for that, but we put in $100,000. The next item is the State Budget Trend Study Commission that we talked about, and that's the $500 that the Senate originally had in. The one-time dollars going for the revisor's bill drafting system to finish that, there's the $509,000 that the revisor had requested for that. And then moving down to the state auditor for the staff retention and the Jobs V audits, basically, if you take these two items together and then the compensation, this will equal the amount of request that the state auditor did make and that was funded by both the House and the Senate. The next is the Attorney General. There is $300,000 a year in there for additional positions, and that's ongoing dollars. The Secretary of State's Safe at Home program, there's $100,000 in there in ongoing dollars each year. Then moving down to the Office of Enterprise Technology, the IT Security, there is $7.8 million in there, and this is ongoing dollars, slightly reduced in the tails so that we could meet the tails target. There's a one-time appropriation for the small agency IT of $1 million. And then moving down to the Department of Administration, LIMIC, this is the amount that the Senate funded, slightly over $1 million to keep the budget at the same level it has been in the current biennium. Then the census, that's the same dollar amount both House, Senate, and the governor had. Next is the targeted group disparity study, and that's in at $425,000. That was at the House level. The next item is the capital restoration design, and there's $15 million in one-time dollars for that. The next is the Disabled Veterans Rest Camp. Both the House and the Senate had that. That's funded at the Senate level with one-time dollars. Then moving down to the public broadcasting area, the request in there is the Senate request, or what the Senate had in their bill, the $200,000 in ongoing money for AMPRS. There's some one-time money to AMPRS for community service grants. That is what the House had in their bill. The digital conversion for NPR is in at $3 million, and that's slightly increased to what the Senate originally had. Then the equipment grants for NPR, one-time dollars of $570,000. The matching grants for public TV are in as one-time dollars of $1.3 million. Then the public TV digital conversion is in at the House level of $9,750,000. And then moving down to the CAP board, we basically have that funded as the Senate did with the ongoing dollars for the operating budget of $62,000 and then $65,000 of one-time dollars for the comprehensive plan. The next item is Department of Finance with the MAPS risk mitigation. That is in one-time dollars of $7 million. That is what the governor had requested and the House had funded. We have the Doer merger savings in there. That was identical in both the House and the Senate. The next item is the Revenue Department, the tax compliance. The $20.5 million, that is to fund the House level of tax compliance. The next item is also in the Department of Revenue, the taxpayer assistance grants, and that's to provide $150,000 in ongoing dollars. Then moving down to the Indian Affairs Council, the burial site acquisition, both the House and the Senate had that at $80,000. And then the House had the Indigenous Language Pilot Project, and that's in there at $50,000. On the second page, we have the Amateur Sports Commission. The Senate has picked up the events development position. That's one-time dollars for the biennium of $134,000. And then we have the operating dollars that the Senate had in originally of $175,000. And then for the various councils, we picked up the funding that the House had for the Black Minnesotans and the Chicano Latino and the Asian Pacific Council. And then moving down, that gets you to the total spending, which would be $109 million, and then ongoing of $71.9. We took into account the Senate language limiting the deputies and the assistant commissioners. So that's another for the biennium of about $7.3 million. And then we picked up the following fee changes. There were some small fee changes to the Secretary of State. We were reflecting the audit fees and state pension aid deduction that both the House and the Senate had. So that's offsetting some of the funding going to the state auditor. And then the other item we have is the tax compliance at the House number of slightly more than $102 million. So that brings us up to total spending, if you move down the sheet, is $547,535,000. That is slightly more than $4 million under the target. And then looking at the tails, we're about $48,000 under the target. And then there's a couple of the non-general fund items. Basically, they were items that we all had similar. The only one that there's a difference is we did not pick up for the administrative hearings the two workers' comp judges in Duluth. And then moving down, looking at some of the statutory appropriation changes, we picked up the same there with that the House and the Senate bills had, with the exception of the pay equity compliance certificate fee.
And, of course, this is only a first offer, a suggestion. We don't know where the House's priorities are. We tried to fund some things that we could not, and we would certainly be interested in what your response is. There are a couple of things that we pretty much have been directed to do here. When Representative Kahn and I met with our leaders today, and if I misstate this, please correct me, but I think, first of all, the base is what we have, and that's what we're going to have. So I think we may have to adopt the base spending because we're not changing. What is being proposed here is the base that was given to us. The 3% compensation is the agreement that the leadership made because that's going to cut across all the budget divisions. Everybody's going to have the 3%. So we don't have any play on that. I think that the leadership has agreed that the numbers that you see for the Senate operations and technology and the House operations and technology are the numbers that they wish to see. The tax compliance, as I indicated, is going to be at the numbers as proposed by the House. And there's two items in here that we were asked to include in the bill, and that would be, as I understand it, public radio, NPR digital conversion, and public TV digital conversion. Those items, I believe, were requested to be in the bill. Beyond that, everything is open for negotiation. Is that what your understanding is, Wilson?
I think so. I do have a couple of questions about
sure.
some of these.
Go ahead.
I did notice that, one thing that I am interested in is how the capital restoration design, which is a project I'm really pretty supportive of, went from $400,000 to $15 million without any actions of the body. That's one of the bigger jumps that I see. And as I'm looking at some of the... Mm-hmm. I know Representative Winkler had two particular commissions that is a project. One commission and one project.
I got rid of two to create one.
I know. I mean,
well,
that I'd like him to explain at some point. But there's an awful lot. We have a bunch of kind of small House proposals that were in here, which you could do an awful lot of them for that.
Well, and we actually left some money in the bottom line. We did not I did not go and try to figure out who authored what or who had what provisions. Yeah. I didn't know. We tried to identify what things we heard and we were supportive of. As the capital restoration, of course, it was not in the bonding bill that both bodies have passed now. The Senate tried to keep it alive. We pulled together $400,000 just to have a placeholder, but we recognized $400,000 was not going to do the job. It really wasn't going to do anything. I think we, and apparently you, recognize that there's some urgency in getting moving on this and doing it right with these revised targets, which frankly gave us more funding for this budget division. We felt that we could do more with the capital, and I don't even know if the $15 million could quite get us there, but we felt that if we're going to make a statement, we have to make a serious statement, and we are prepared to do so, even if it meant not funding some other areas that we thought were important as well. This building belongs to the people, and we need to take care of it. So, any of our, my Senate colleagues wish to comment on any of our Senate proposals here? Any thoughts you have? Senator Rest.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I'll just add my comments for the capital restoration. We understand from the project manager and the folks that look at these issues that what we really would need to spend in order to get the full value is $29 million in this next year. By spending even at $15 million, we will incur an additional $20 million as the project moves on in escalation costs. So it, in a sense, it's the idea that if you spend $15 million, it's going to cost us $35 million. If we spend $29 million, you get $29 million. Be that as it may, the Senate conferees felt strongly about making sure that this project is something that we actually do discuss and recognize the urgency of.
Representative Ergel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just that $15 million, what are you anticipating that be spent on?
Mr. Chairman and Representative Erdahl, on the continued planning process, we've had suggested ideas from the money that was spent last year and the year before at $1.2 million. We have a project manager in place, and what would happen over the next year would be continuing consulting with the House and the Senate and the governor, for that matter, on the planning and design process.
Representative Holberg.
Mr. Chair, I guess I'm kind of shocked and dismayed that we would go from $400,000 to $15 million, because I don't think our budget increased that much at all. But express some concerns. I mean, this is a bonding proposal, and I understand the need for probably having an opportunity to have some additional resources to start talking about the need for the capital. And if I would be the first one to say that we don't have to address the issues of the capital. But we need to address those issues in a very thoughtful way with all three branches of government and some of the other agencies as well, like the Attorney General and into that particular design, and also to study alternatives for what might be renovation and restoration of it, but the additions to the Capitol. And I know that there is at least a small legislative group that I think had some particular meetings. Would be very hesitant going down this road of spending 15 or I think at one time $29 million, because it seems like that then we are going down the road of pre-designing and designing something that we don't know if we want to have designed. What we should do with the capital is talk about just the infrastructure that is badly needed electrical and HVAC and so forth, and possibly building two new buildings for legislative actions like they have done in Phoenix, where on the campus there are the House and the Senate legislative bodies with nice hearing rooms, and it's start from scratch on it, and the Capitol is used for some other areas. So I think if we do this type of appropriation, we're marching down the road of the same type of thing. So two concerns. First of all, I would express a deep desire to do some planning on it and involve people to be talking in a thoughtful way. But I have deep concerns about going down this road. And then anything that's over and above a certain amount is obviously the bonding type of proposal for the Capitol.
And Representative Solberg, of course, I think the anticipation is to do some studying. There is no intention of, this is not a bonding committee and capital investments, and we would not be able to put that kind of money down. But a fundamental decision has to be made. I think we all agree that the infrastructure of the Capitol needs replacing, the wiring, the HVAC, everything. But if all we're going to do is do that, we need to decide that that's all we're going to do, because you can't complete all that now and then say, oh, by the way, now let's do some expansion and renovation, because if you're going to do that, do the expansion renovation first and then go back into the HVAC, any more than you wouldn't do it in your home, putting the HVAC in first and then doing the renovation. You have to make the decision. And until we make that decision, I think we're kind of stuck. But I think we need to make a decision sooner than later. If it holds off till next year, it holds off, but the costs are going to keep escalating. Some deterioration is going to keep going on, and I think we have a fiduciary responsibility to the citizens of the state to preserve that building.
Mr. Chairman, I would not disagree with your last statement, but I want to be able to say we have a fiduciary responsibility to the state and the historical preservation of the building as well. And there are some deep concerns of whether or not the plans that were presented accomplishes the second part of that goal. And I have no objection. Evidently, the $400,000 that the Senate put in must have been designed in such a way to start funding the studies of that need to take place. Mm-hmm. But the $15 million seems to be, as I understood, the pre-design, and I don't know as if we're down to the pre-design of a building yet.
Well, Representative Solberg, the money simply came from the fact that when it became clear that the Capital Investment Committee and the House and the Senate were not going to do anything on this issue, the governor's proposing nothing, when the state government budget bill came to the Senate floor, I had to pull some money out of my modest little budget that had virtually nothing and kind of patch something together, and $400,000 was what I came up with, and figuring, well, at least you've got something to discuss it, because otherwise you've got nothing. So there wasn't, we wanted to do more. That's as far as we could go. But is there any other discussion on the numbers here? Any questions? Representative Winkler.
So I think you said at the beginning that there's something like $51 million in one-time money assigned as a target.
The target that was assigned was $51,100,000.
Okay.
But the some one-time money is, does public broadcasting get some of the one-time money? Yes, some of it's going to go to public broadcasting, which was an agreement made by the leaders. Some of the one-time money is going to go to House and Senate technology and operations. So that number is going to be reduced by the direction that we've been given for that. After those are taken into account, then the one-time money is available, but only for one-time expenditures. You can't put it down for something that might be ongoing and saying, well, we'll put it here and 2 years from now, think about what we're doing. So.
And Mr. Chair,
Representative Winkler.
The follow-up then. So any item here that does not have a 2010-2011 offer amount, I assume that any such item would be included in the $51 million or counted against that?
I believe, yeah. Mr. Lindy?
Yeah, roughly, but I should point out with the compensation that that does increase by about almost $5 million in the tail. So there are a couple things that like that that do, that's probably the main one where it does ramp up in the tails.
Thanks.
Representative Kahn.
Chairman, I'm looking at a couple of things that you didn't put in that we thought were like under administration, the DPS, Emergency Operations Relocation.
Right. Mm-hmm.
I thought we had some, you know, that's one of those weird things that it's not, it's a DPS issue, but administration always does it because they do a better job on this than giving the money to the agency. I wasn't, you know, maybe we could have the administrator. I wasn't sure that was actually an optional thing.
We also heard from the administration on it. We're happy to have them weigh in and discuss whether, you know, the urgency for that, if that needs to be adjusted. I think this conference committee will be more than happy to look at it.
Do you want to have that now or just put this
list? We've got a list here, and I think that, you know, as I say, I'm not sure what the House's priorities are, but we'll be more than happy to look at them. And when we've seen what the House's priorities are, balancing against the Senate, if the administration has some issues and wants us to look at some things, then I think we'll do that.
I had another question about, is that how I noticed the Amateur Sports Commission, the events developing development position was one-time funding. How does that work out to be one-time funding?
Essentially that we took the House position on that, which was one-time funding, and I think with the increased operating dollars in this position, because they're going into that land lease sports mall that may be in effect in the next biennium, I think that was taken into account, but right now the agreement hasn't been signed, so we can't really book anything on the spreadsheet.
Okay. I recall they said it would pay for itself after this biennium.
Yeah, okay. I recall the reason I was forgetting is that wasn't originally part of our bill. So I didn't.
Representative Holbrook.
I want to look at the New American Commission, the LCC, New Americans Commission. I noticed in the spreadsheet that there was nothing in the House. I don't know. I think we had some language, if I recall it, and nothing in the Senate. And all of a sudden it gets to be 100,000. Can you give me why? If it was, is there new information that came through that all of a sudden we needed to have a new fiscal note?
It's the New American Commission, the Ethnic Heritage Commission, is the same commission. It's just different names in each body. But as I recall, the fiscal note was for a higher number. Is that right?
Mr. Chairman, there is a companion to the New Americans Commission in the House. I don't believe there is a companion to the Ethnic Heritage Commission, but they do address the same issues of new Americans who have chosen to settle in Minnesota. And in a way, I think maybe what we're anticipating is looking at the language that established those and those two commissions, and then seeing if there's a way that we could fund them as a single commission. And I don't think there's any there's no pride in the name of it. But since we had that one in our bill, that's the one that we chose to give money to. And there actually was in the original bill, there was a $200,000 appropriation. We wanted to keep the bill alive in the Senate. We didn't have the money, but we put the language of the bill in Senate File 1997 with the hope that there would be an opportunity to give it some funding. Otherwise, it can certainly operate with less dollars than that and just supported by Senate and House staff, and which I would assume is the same thing that could happen with the Ethnic Heritage Commission, too. They probably don't. They could operate with existing staff without additional funding for the LCC, but it seems to me that if we really want to make a statement about the goals of both of those commissions, which, again, while not identical, are very similar, that that would be a place to start.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I need to have a little bit of understanding. Is the New Americans Commission and the Ethnic Heritage Commission ones that are kind of identical except for name?
Well, that's what I was just saying,
okay, that's what
Mr.
I thought.
Chairman. The makeup is a little bit different. The appointing authority is a little bit different. But the goals of finding ways to capitalize on the assets that new Minnesotans, new ethnic groups bring to our state is the same, including how they relate to a global economy.
Mr. Chairman, it seems to me that when we're establishing our budget and passing our bills to begin with, that I can understand Representative Rest saying that the Ethnic Heritage Commission, if the fiscal note on that is $38,000, that might be absorbed within the LCC budget, although the House did indeed fund it for $38,000. But it's a little bit surprising that the other one is all of a sudden appears at $100,000, and if that is the true cost of it, for that to be absorbed by the LCC seems like a very large amount of money for the LCC to absorb.
Well,
so I'm just kind of surprised that that there was no funding for it, and all of a sudden it shows up on the first spreadsheet as $100,000, but we'll have some additional discussion.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Solberg, it seems to me that what we need to do is to look at the language that establishes both of them in terms of policy, and in a sense, this is $100,000 that's devoted to that effort. And again, we did have an appropriation for this commission as an ongoing commission, not as a one-time commission, too, at $200,000, and we scale that back to not funding it, but not because it didn't need the money to do it. But I don't see that we have any that we're going to have any particular disagreement in the long run about whether it's called one thing or the other, that its mission is similar, that whether they deserve their mission deserves some additional funding. And we're proposing here that it does, but we could have just as easily put the $100,000 on the Ethnic Heritage Commission and said that we want to combine it with the New Americans Commission, but the Senate initiative, so we funded the Senate initiative rather than the House one, but I don't see any big deal there.
Yeah, Representative Holbert.
Mr. Chairman, we don't care about the name at all.
Yeah.
But I'm surprised that you had a fiscal note that said $200,000 to begin with, and then all of a sudden it says, "Wow, we're not going to do that. We're just going to put
the money."
Well, I understand we didn't have the money, and then. If you didn't have the money, I'm wondering why it was put in. If it wasn't, didn't have
hope
the money.
Hope springs eternal.
Well, no. Mr. Chair, I understand that hope springs eternal, and we've seen a couple of hopes that may be not quite so eternal.
By adjusting the numbers and the Senate coming down from its salary supplement, and by adopting the House tax compliance, You can see that there's a number of things in here that we were able to add that, you know, were not in the bills that passed the Senate, simply because now we had our priorities, we just couldn't fund them. There's still other things we'd like to do.
Mr. Chairman, let me clarify the tax compliance.
No.
We don't get to spend the tax compliance money.
Oh, I understand. We don't have it all.
I mean, that's a net number, so that's a cost and a net. There's a wash on that completely. So the tax compliance number has no negative effect or positive effect on this budget.
Well, but we are adopting the House tax compliance numbers, and so those are the numbers.
Mr. Chairman, I understand you may adopt it, but that doesn't give you the right to use that to justify additional $15 million.
Some of the money, we were given our targets, and this is where we started assigning things. But are there any other questions? As I say, I recognize that the House needs to sit down and take a look at this.
Would someone explain the State Budget Trends Study Commission?
That was the thing that Mr. Bodern mentioned at the end that was on the back of our page R79 of Article 2. Mr. Bodern, could you go over that again?
Mr. Chairman, that's Section 40 on the Senate side of Article 2, beginning on R78. And again, I think if you look at on the Senate side, lines beginning on line 40.12, the language authorizes the Commission to contract with appropriate consultants and experts needed to complete the study. Given the scope of the study, which is a 25-year study, looking ahead at demographic trends, I think it's anticipated there'd be a considerable use of a lot of data analysis, and the Commission would need the funding for that.
And Representative Solberg had indicated there's some similar bills and ways and means that people might take a position on, but there's other issues out here, too. So.
Mr. Chairman, I think one in ways and means is probably not as aggressive of this, but it asks the department to, when they are doing their forecasting shortly afterwards, take into consideration the state demographic trends and how that may affect the budgets in the future. They're asking the experts in the Department of Finance to be able to do that. They already are, that's kind of part of already the forecasting that takes place within that department. They have to look at some trends that happens. I don't know if we're 15 public members and would have very much more expertise on that than what the department has, and the expenditure of $500,000 seems an awful lot.
This was not an issue that came through the Senate State Government Budget Division. It was came from the Senate Finance Committee when the bill passed through there. So,
well, I guess I don't quite understand why this should be something that comes through the LCC, and why this is something that's done in the demographer's office and that in the Department of Finance. And I know that sometimes we have this issue that the legislature wants its own information, but this is a place where I think we really want, I mean, everyone is entitled to their own opinion, but we usually say that everybody ought to start with the same facts. And this is a place where I really, I think, have much more interest in making sure that the administration is doing it the way we want them to do it, rather than kind of taking on this bit of doing it ourselves. I'm not enthusiastic about that appropriation unless I understand it to the LCC.
Certainly.
Unless I understand it better.
Certainly. Mr. Chairman.
Senator Russ.
When Senator Cohen was explaining the bill, he was he talked a lot about the Latimer Tax Commission and was looking, not for taxes, but was looking to have a this budget trends group be of the same stature and resources available as the Latimer Tax Commission some 20 years ago. So he specifically mentioned that, at least in his conversations with me, and I think even publicly. Whether it's the way to go, that was what Senator Cohen was presented, particularly, I think, looking, it's where the information comes from. I think that's a point well taken, but We've all been told by the demographer and the state economists about the changes that are going to take place in the next 20 years in the state of Minnesota. And Senator Cohen's thought was that a more or less of a blue ribbon study group to look at those so that we can plan accordingly in our budget as we don't have replacement workers, as we more people are dependent upon our long-term health care system, et cetera, and that we need to start riding that tiger now and not waiting until we get hit by it. And so he thought that this kind of an approach was a thoughtful way of dealing with the kinds of information that we get at every turn from Mr. Gillespie and Mr. Stenson.
Representative Kahn. Well,
Mr. Chairman, I don't think I disagree with that, and I think I actually like almost all of the language that is in there and think it should be done, but I think we ought to just command the Commissioners of Finance and Revenue to do it and not do it and have the Legislative Coordinating Commission just interacting with them as we do it. I don't think we need a grant to the legislature. I don't like the idea of the separation that's kind of inherent that giving these instructions and doing a grant to the LCC. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah, that's a good point. Yeah.
But I like, you know, if we can look at writing the language, taking out the appropriation to the LCC and writing the language as instructions to all these guys, that's something I at least would be supportive of.
Are there other questions of the... Representative Winkler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I know you mentioned that for Senate technology and House technology that these numbers were a gift provided by leadership.
Yes.
So is there any additional explanation provided for why both numbers went up from the bills that were presented?
Well, I can only speak for my understanding of the Senate budget. As I indicated when we were going initially through the bills, we did not ask... need to have somebody from the House come over to the Senate and justify the House's budget. We assume that the House would come up with its own, and we will respect the decisions the House made and hope that the House will respect the decisions the Senate made. For many years, the Senate, frankly, has not invested in its technology. It's fallen behind. I think most people are recognizing that. We have some catch-up to do. In fact, we used to return money to the general fund, and we're seriously paying the price for it. We'll fund, and we're seriously paying the price for it. We've got a voting board that's falling apart. We've got our servers are crashing almost on a daily basis. There's things that we have to do, and we've over the years have respected. The House has done a much better job of investing in some of the technology, the audiovisual, the things that you need to have if you're going to keep up, and we have it. So I think that the leaders have looked at that, agreed upon that, and that's why the House, of course, being a larger body than the Senate is in the long run is going to have more needs and more money, and we've always tried to respect that. So
I can't speak for the House numbers. I can only speak for the Senate. But when we had the meeting this morning, as I said, I was given directions from the Senate Majority Leader to honor and respect the House's request, and I believe that the Speaker requested that we follow the Senate's request. Discussion. Further discussion on this. Representative Kahn, if you don't mind, would it be okay if we approve those items which we've been directed to approve, that is the approve the base, approve the 3% compensation, approve the House operation and technology budget, approve the Senate operation and technology budget, approve the House tax compliance, and then the MPR digital conversion for public radio and the public TV digital conversion, which is what we've been directed, requested.
Mr. Chair?
Mr. Solberg.
I don't think that's wrong on the way you're going, but I noticed that there's a difference in the House and the Senate on on the TV and radio.
Right.
So maybe we could just hold off a little bit till we get some additional information on that.
Is there any information we've had?
I don't think we need it right now, but maybe later on.
Okay.
Yeah, just those two.
But just
or if you want to approve them, we can revisit them as well. That'd be fine, too.
Okay. Well, we've been requested that
sure.
they go in the bill. So,
sure.
But we don't know what. But this
yeah, chairman, we don't know the numbers.
I think we don't exactly know the number.
I just, that's all I'm asking.
Sure.
I think it's okay to approve it if there's an adjustment in the number.
Okay.
We need to make that adjustment.
We can hold off on that part. Representative Kahn?
I think we're saying
go ahead
approve
and do it.
Approve it and then
go
adjust
ahead
the numbers.
Go ahead and approve it,
if we have
to make it.
Okay. Is that a motion that you're comfortable making, Representative Kahn?
Not really, but I will.
Okay. Representative Kahn moves that we approve the base budget, the 3% compensation for the agencies within our jurisdiction, the House operating and technology, the Senate operation and technology, the House tax compliance, and also the public radio MPR digital conversion and the public TV digital conversion, with the understanding that the numbers for digital conversion, public radio and public TV, may have to be adjusted if we have different numbers. Is there discussion on that motion? Senator Rest.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. What is the source of the information that will determine the digital conversion? Where do we get those numbers from? Does that come from the Department of Finance to tell us what the actual cost of that will be?
Mr. Lundin or Ms. Roberts, can you help us?
I believe the direction we've gotten is from the leadership of both the House and the Senate. So I think there's some concern. We just want to double-check these numbers because I don't think it was entirely clear in the discussions this morning what the dollar amount was we should be looking at.
So, Mr. Chairman, this is not some analysis made by the Department of Finance on the fiscal impact. This is a number that the entities themselves have told us they need.
Has there been any
validation of those numbers? I mean, because it is not so much from 2.5 to 3 million, but from 9,750 to 11. That's a big number,
Mr. Chairman,
in terms of the extensiveness of the conversion or what it costs or whatever. I'm not opposed to the higher number if that's what it takes, but I'd like to know how that number was arrived at and how it's going to be validated.
But Mr. Chairman, I have had some conversations over the some time ago with that, and it's kind of, well, this is what we need, but what can you do it for? And that's a question I ask. I just want to be able to verify those numbers.
Absolutely.
And to see if we're in the right ballgame on that. So I'm comfortable with approving it, with maybe one of them can go down as well. I
yes,
want to be able to ask that question
yes,
as well.
Yes, right, okay. Just curious.
Is there further discussion on the motion?
Yep, Mr. Chair.
Cyril Singh.
Did you say Senate and House technology, or that's what I thought I heard you say. Did you want to have operating?
No, I said operating and technology for the House,
okay.
Operating and technology for the Senate.
Mm-hmm.
Further discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor on the motion, please signify by saying aye.
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 Aye. Those opposed say no. The motion prevails.
No.
I think I've gone as far as I can go at the moment, Representative Kahn. What's your desire?
Maybe we should take a recess for... The problem is we have a very, very tight timeline.
Yes.
And I do think we have to start having some more substantive discussion of some of the differences.
Yes.
And I do think... I don't know that we're prepared to do a counter proposal. Representative
Holbert.
But just as I looked at going through these, there's obviously two decisions that have to be made. One main one is what's carried where.
Yes.
And once we make that decision, we can spend a great deal of time trying to reconcile the differences in if we decide that. So that's one thing I think we need to have some conversations with, too.
Well, that's correct. As an example, in the Senate, the taxpayer assistance grants are being carried in our tax bill. But we, in preparing this, I agreed with the House that this we have oversight over the Department of Revenue. This probably belongs within this area, even if it's charged against our targets. We have other things. The OPEB language is now, as I understand it, it's in the Senate public financing bill, whereas we're carrying it here. And so we have some fundamental decisions that have to be made and have to be made fairly soon.
Well, what's the status of how we're going to make them?
Well, I would suggest that we have a recess for maybe an hour and have an opportunity to have each caucus look at some of the issues that are before.
Is there anything else that needs to be brought to our attention at this time? 1 hour, is that?
Sure. Okay. Well, I don't know. I'm not the chair.
I want to give people who are here an opportunity, a time certain if I can.
9 o'clock.
So if we say an hour.
9 o'clock.
Okay, let's till 9 o'clock.
Mr. Chair, you're in this building, and I don't know if you guys want to have your conference caucus or not. I don't know if we have a spot for you to meet if you want to try to do that, or do you want to go back? Are you
anxious? We lob the ball into your court, so we have to find out. Okay. So we know where we're at on this one, but I want to give the other people here an opportunity to go get something to eat and take a break or whatever. So we'll be in recess until 9 o'clock. Thank you.
All right. We'll be going late.
So
we're going to go all night then? You're leaving at 10.
That's the question. Is our portion of
the
I'm going to go to the next one.
Well, you have a regular congregation?
Not current church.
Did you have everybody here today? So how did that work?
I have had.
We're all sitting around and
who's working? Who's working this week?
Can we go?
You know, I work nights for 10 years almost, so.
All right.
Well, I hated it. I couldn't sleep during the day. Worked on trucks. The truck industry is geared, 24/7. I'd be painting in the middle of the night, walk off my ladder and forget the last four steps and drop like a rock. I did that so many times. It's like, oh boy, I'm getting too old. It wasn't funny.
Anyway,
down on the ground.
Thank you, Devin.
I had no idea what's coming next.
We don't know how to operate your equipment, so that's technology. So we don't know how to operate your technology.
Well,
yeah. Here's your turn out there. I don't even know. If you gotta turn on the light, I come into a room
and
start.
Hello.
My favorite. You're welcome.
I will call back to order the meeting of the conference committee on Senate File 1997. It's about 9:47 p.m. Welcome back, Madam Chair.
We do have a set of numbers that we just need to wait a little bit to get copied and checked over and so forth. But I think a major point in terms of getting this bill done, if we're intending to get it done by the suggested deadline of noon on Monday, is that we do have to make decisions
Wednesday.
We do have to make decisions about the language and the bills and what's controlled, the bills that are in the language items that are in the House bill and aren't in the Senate bill. And one of the problems I will point out, and I know there's a big difference between what the House did and what the Senate did, and one of the problems that we have was, I think, and I don't know who in the Senate was responsible for this, but one of the problems that we did have was the fact that we continued what's been in the rules ever since I've been here. If we did policy bills and we had assorted deadlines for the policy bills, and we kind of all knew how to deal with that, and you had the system of doing your, may have had some merit in terms of having numbers out real fast, but you did your appropriations bills first and your policy bills after. So we just, when you're putting your appropriations bills together, you know what bills are in separate policy bills, you know whether they pass, you know what each house is doing, and you know what we've both done at various times, the House and Senate, is what things haven't been considered by the policy committees in the other body. So then you, after they've come through policy committee, you put them in your appropriations bill. Well, that wasn't available this time because of that status. So we put a bunch of policy things in this bill. I know that some of them are in other bills. And, our position kind of is that we really want them all. We want all of them in this bill unless we know that they're in another bill that's passed. So that covers the major part of that. There are a whole bunch of other things, and we can start going through what they are. They're the major, the next two pages, we can go through those, the language items, no comparable positions on that, or the, and the major issue is the election bills. And I guess we have the chief authors of most of the election bills on this committee, and so, there's a lot of language dealing to election bills in the bill, and I don't see, with what the House rules are and how the House is considering and the amount of time that the House spent passing these election bills in this form through our committee, I don't see any other way they can pass except in this bill and this conference committee. So that's where we're coming from.
Well,
That refers to all of them, but the most important part is the election part, Articles 4 and 5.
Well, I don't know. I don't feel comfortable trying to conferee a number of bills which have multiple authors in the Senate. We were given instructions fairly early to separate the budget bills from the policy. I don't know where the change came, but for instance, Senator Rest chairs the State and Local Government Operations Committee in the Senate and has the oversight over elections. Senator Larson chaired the election subcommittee, and I think from the very start of the session,
her belief and understanding was that we would not try to have an omnibus elections bill, and Senator Rustin, Senator Larson can certainly discuss that. I don't think it's insurmountable to try to find a solution. There's an article on best practices. It's my understanding, well, Senator Metzen had that bill in the Senate. I believe it was Representative Hillstrom who has it in the House. It's my understanding that there's negotiations going on which can, I think, resolve that bill in such a way that it can pass on its own. The Senate has passed it on its own. I think that can be resolved. Article 5, election clarifications, that's a standalone bill the Senate has passed. Senator Laurie had it. I forget who the House author is, but I believe that bill could be resolved as a standalone bill in itself. As to the multiple election bills, perhaps I defer Senator Rest, but I think she and Representative Pawlowski had made a decision not to have an omnibus elections bill, and I just don't know where we could go. I defer to Senator Rest on that issue.
Mr. Chairman, that's certainly correct. Senator Representative Pawlowski and I had a number of meetings at the beginning of the session. I then also spoke with Majority Leader, and it's my understanding that Representative Pawlowski had spoken with the Speaker, and I certainly had made it clear in no uncertain terms following the decisions that were made to keep the bills as standalone policy bills, made that extremely clear on more than one occasion to the Secretary of State and his staff, and the Senate has followed through on that. We have passed all these bills as standalones. We didn't put any of them together because we wanted the individual policies, none of which contradict one another, to stand on their own. And so I was dismayed and somewhat surprised to see them all showing up in policy bills, not the ones that have I don't have any problem with the ones that have a fiscal impact being in this bill, but certainly was surprised to see bills that had no fiscal impact showing up in a finance bill, as well as the other lots of other policy that either wasn't in a bill or that the Senate had already passed. And every single one of these has passed. It doesn't seem like to me it would take very much for the House to bring them up, take them out of the Finance Committee if they're still in there, and or to pass the ones that are on the floor. If you choose not to do that, you choose not to do that. But we certainly abided by the agreement that we had at the beginning of the session, and I don't see any reason to give up on it now when all you need to do is pass those bills.
Yeah. Representative Marcon.
I certainly yield to Representative Filthy because he's been a point person on elections also, and I'm kind of sort of astounded to find he was out of disagreement, but maybe he can clarify his position on this.
Representative Hilty.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. One thing I would like to mention is that I don't believe that what we're talking about bills in the state government finance bill would constitute an omnibus bill. There are actually only two House files that are included in the state government finance bill. Both of those are mine. One is House File 1110, which I believe Senator Higgins has the companion in the Senate, and the other one is House File 1223, which is also a Higgins bill. It's only those two, and the reason that we did include them in this bill is that they both do have fiscal implications.
No, they don't. We passed them, Mr. Chairman. Representative Hilty, we passed them without that.
Representative Hilty, go ahead.
But okay.
Yeah. Well, go ahead, Representative Hilty.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I believe that what occurred in the Senate is that the parts of those bills that had fiscal implications were removed, which we did not do in the House. But as we considered those bills in the House, they did have fiscal implications, which is why they were included here. And Mr. Chair and Senator Rest, I believe that one conceivable solution to this would be to follow a practice that I believe was initiated by the Senate in the previous two state government finance bills that were conferenced, in which a working subgroup was established and did not necessarily consist of members of the conference committee. There were a couple members of the conference committee, but I believe one of the major participants in the last one of these working groups in which I participated was Senator Hottinger, who was not a member of the conference committee. The issues of the elections bills were discussed, worked out, and agreed upon in that working group, so that the only thing that occurred in the actual conference committee was to recognize that and to accept the mutually agreed upon language at that time. And I think that that would be a reasonable solution, since deadlines are passed. We do not have companion bills that it's possible to move in the House in any other form. And I think that many of the issues that are represented in these bills are much too important to just ignore for, I think, clearly resolvable impasse.
Let me pose a question. I mean, it was just about 10 hours ago that I found out, and Representative Kahn and I found out, that we have to have this bill done by noon on Wednesday. How, it seems to me that our first priority, our priority is to get a budget bill done. If we don't have a budget bill done, we failed. There's a lot of other things that people have an interest in. There's a lot of policy issues. How do we possibly accomplish that? And, you know, I don't know, getting another working group that's not part of this conference committee, I can already tell you virtually, you know, most members of the Minnesota Senate are already on some other conference committees right now. They're working on other issues. I don't know how I pull them out and have them start working on this one when they should be doing other work. I don't know how to do it.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Hilty.
Well, Mr. Chair, I think that in my reading of these two or these four bills, my two in the House and the two Higgins bills in the Senate, I think there are very few items in either of those bills in which there would be any substantial, if any at all, disagreement. I think that this is something that, if we had the mechanism in place, could be agreed upon very readily. I don't see anything that I'm in disagreement with in what has passed the Senate, and I would surmise that that would be pretty much Senator Higgins' attitude as well.
And on Senator Rust.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Representative Hilty, I would assume that your bills, if they were heard and put into this bill, are in the Finance Committee. Certainly they can be voted out of the Finance Committee and enacted on. And Senator Hottinger, God bless him, is not here. That is not the way in which we dealt with the two new chairs of state government who are responsible for elections. That is not the way that we dealt with these bills. And I had an understanding with not only with Representative Pawlowski, but also I assumed his representations of the Speaker's attitude and mine of the majority leader's attitude said that that was not the way we were going to do business this year. We did not have a group meeting for months and months on elections bills. We had hearings on elections bills. We changed them. We amended them. They were heard in the subcommittee. They were heard in the full committee. And they went to the floor and had debate on the floor and were they were all passed there. And we have a really strong respect for policy chairs in the Senate, and I'm assuming they do in the House as well. And I think I have the full support of the majority leader.
Representative Solberg.
part of the difficulty here is the dilemma that was and it was instituted a different process between the House and the Senate on the deadlines for policy bills. And as Representative Rest says that you could have them in the Finance Committee. Well, if you are passing separate bills and you have passed them over to us, I don't know where that companion bill might be. It might not be in a Finance Committee. It might be in the Policy Committee, the House companion for that. And, well, let me finish.
Representative Solberg.
Thank you. It might be in the Policy Committee as opposed to the Finance Committee. And if it is, there's no companion in the House. We're past our deadline on that policy. So you guys have a different deadline, and so you took the time to pass your policy bills later. But there was no indication whether or not that was going to be passed or not at that deadline. So the House made an assurance of a different route. And part of the problem is caused not only by what's happening, but also the different deadlines that have traditionally matched up, and we understood what was happening in each house. That wasn't the case this year. And the separate bills that the Senate is passing may not have a companion available. It might be dead in a policy committee someplace. And we're past that deadline a long time ago.
Okay. I don't think that still resolves the issue, though. How are we going to do all these things in the time that's allotted left to us? My personal priority is to finish the budget bill.
Well, let's get to it. Well,
Representative
Mr. Chairman, our attitude is that we've presented you from the House is the House budget bill. You have nothing in it that doesn't have some financial implications. If there's anything that you object to, and we can start going through it, you know, there are things which I understand which have been passed by the Senate, and then they're in another bill. So I can't believe that you have any, you know, I mean, there should be no problem with that. It's just that we have no idea of how those bills are going to pass. And so our attitude is that the House bill is our House budget bill.
Well, I guess we just approached it from a different way. The Senate bill, I think, was about 45 pages of what we thought was a budget bill, and the House had about 150 pages of what you thought was a budget bill, and we've got differences here. I don't know what the middle ground is, or if there is one. So, is there any further discussion? Is there anything else you wish to discuss at this point?
Well, we do, within minutes,
okay,
give you our
sure
fiscal counter offer as soon as two people have looked at it as opposed to one person.
Sure. We understand that, you know, staff is under a lot of pressure to produce quickly these days. We understand that.
We need to have copies made of this now.
Okay. Should we?
And then one of the things that we can do is we can have some of the issues that we'd like to have included in the bill, which we didn't discuss, or we'd like to start discussing some of them.
Okay. Do you need a few minutes until the sheets show up? Okay. Would you like to?
No, we can have that. You know, for example, Representative Winkler has two items in the bill which were in the House bill and not in the Senate bill, and so I think that I'd like to yield to have him.
Okay. Well, I take it this will be part of the offer.
Yes.
So okay, we probably should discuss that if it's part of your offer. Representative Winkler, did you have something you wanted to bring to our attention?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Two quick things. The first is under the Senate offer, I'm looking at the LCC Terrorism and Disaster Planning Commission. Originally, it was a legislative commission, but since there are members of the public included on there, we're amending that, I guess, to just be a commission. And this came to me from the former CEO of the Hennepin County Medical System Center, Medical Center, and as well Dr. Mike Osterholm. And they talked about the failure to have a coordinated body to provide oversight of disaster and legislative and terrorism preparedness, and the failure to have a legislative body to look at potential risks, the available resources, and to provide an analysis of what is most concerning, and then to make policy recommendations to the legislature for specific actions. This is the kind of thing I think that could be just in, say, the Public Safety Committee or just in the Health Committee, but it really crosses silos of state government and it crosses jurisdictions of state and local government. And so the thought is that you need to have one central place to provide policy guidance for the legislature and make recommendations. There is an executive agency working group on this issue, but I think, and speaking with senior members in the House at least, the concern they have is that there's inadequate oversight of what those agencies are doing. So part of this would address that issue. The governor had a significant budget request for pandemic flu preparedness, and what the concept here is to look at the range of issues from tornadoes to terrorism to pandemic flu, look at the likelihood of risk, the likely severity of risk, and try to make recommendations on policy and funding that would fairly balance and adequately balance that preparation. And the final thing I think worth noting is that most of the state planning efforts on these issues revolve around responding to disaster rather than preventing them. And again, this is insight from people who've been working in Minnesota and working around the country on these issues, and they've pushed this sort of lack of adequate coordination and oversight as an important issue. And the other item that Representative Kahn mentioned was I guess I could take questions on that if more discussion.
Well, I've got a thought or two, and it seems to me that, like everything else, the responsibility ultimately is going to have to be with some executive branch agency to do this. And I believe that they currently are doing it. If the legislature is not tuning into these issues, paying attention to it, it's either because it's made decisions that not to do it, or maybe are asleep at the switch and we should be exercising more oversight than we have been. But it seems to me I would think the legislature, within its current committee structure, its current resources, ought to be able to be paying attention to these issues right now. Why would we need a separate commission to do this, which you're pulling busy legislators off of the things that they're currently doing and creating a new mechanism? Why couldn't, say, our crime prevention, public safety committees do it now? Why couldn't we create respective committees in the House and give them jurisdiction to say, pay attention to these issues? I don't know what prevents us from doing this today.
Part of the reason, I think, is that, Mr. Chair, is that because it crosses both silos of state government and state policy, it also crosses what I think are somewhat overburdened silos here at the legislature. The Health and Human Services Committee, to take up these kinds of issues is they're already probably doing two committees' worth of work in one committee. To add this kind of role, I think, is probably adding a bit to their duties, and likewise with public safety. And there also is a state and local component to this, so I suppose local government would be involved. And an alternative would be to create a terrorism and disaster preparedness committee in the House and Senate to address these issues, but then that would lack some of the expertise to guide the strategic planning and thought. And that's where Jeff Spartz, as I mentioned, the former immediately past CEO of the Hennepin County Medical Center, and Mike Osterholm have really emphasized the need to be to take a step back and to look forward and try to address issues that don't kind of neatly fit within current state agency core mission. And so while there's no reason the legislature couldn't do this, it yet hasn't. And another, I think, And for that, and I recognize that, and for that reason I did put a 4-year sunset on the commission, which is, I think, atypical of most of the commissions we have, because there's no reason this has to be going on forever and ever. If they do their work well, it may generate enough of a policy interest to change the way some of these agencies do business today.
Well, I...
Representative Bingham mentions that I did insist on eliminating 2 legislative commissions to create this one.
It does seem to me... We've tried sunsets on a lot of things around here before, and it just seems that nothing ever goes out of existence. We just keep extending the sunsets out there, and because once we create something, they just never seem to go away. And, you know, once every couple of decades, we actually try to go through and take inventory and try to eliminate some things that we shouldn't be doing. But once you get something going, people somehow think that they ought to keep going at it, but sometimes we have to just ask the question, you know, can't we do this right now? I don't know. Any other questions on this one from Representative Wickman? Okay. You had another issue? A separate one?
Yes.
Go ahead.
The other one that Representative Kahn mentioned is listed under DOER, and it's a personal health records pilot. And this actually is an extension of a pilot that's going on right now in the corporate sector at Carlson Companies, and as well in... through Stratus Health, a nonprofit operating in Wilmer. And the concept is that as we move towards this concept of consumer-driven healthcare, the consumer should be the ones who are directing where their records are going. And this technology has been already in the process of being proven, and it's very popular with employees, but essentially it's a benefit offered to employees to allow them to have more control over where their medical records are placed and how they're accessed. And the University of Minnesota Department of Health Informatics has done a lot of work on this issue and has done has pretty strong numbers, I think, showing cost savings and improvements in quality by eliminating the errors involved in duplicative records. And this is not a healthcare committee, but the House, at least, has a significant portion of their healthcare bill this year focused on electronic health records. And this is part of that trend. It simply puts more control over the individual consumer and gives them access that is independent of the health insurance provider, independent of their employer, and is more of an ongoing consumer-directed activity.
And actually, I'm personally familiar with this issue because I'm the Senate author of this bill. We weren't quite sure where this was going to pop up, so the Finance Committee routed it over to the Higher Education Committee because it was going to be done on a pilot basis by the University of Minnesota and the Minsky system. And so Senator Pappas, who is the chair of the Higher Ed Committee, heard the bill in her budget division, but then we did not hear it in the state and local government. So I'm budget division. So I'm personally familiar with it, but I don't know who the other Senate conferees are. So I understand the issue, but so I'm aware of it.
Mr. Chairman, is this provision in higher education?
No,
it's not being discussed there.
It was heard there, and then I think then when the House adopted it into its state government budget bill, then the Higher Ed Committee decided not to move on. So it's never really been, the Senate has not taken a position one way or the other. However, when we adopted our budget targets originally, some money was originally set aside for this, as you can see, and we originally funded it at $200,000.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Winkler, that the provision is not harmed by the dissolving of DOER of oversight because it's being done as by the university. Is that?
I think the language.
Which is why
the provision,
I guess we sent it there.
Mr. Chair, the language in the provision in the bill, I think, actually specifies that whoever the relevant successor of DOER would be. Because it actually applies to state employees and Minsky employees, as originally conceived. So that's why there's sort of this uncertainty about ultimately which finance committee it should go through.
Mr. Chairman, we're saying
Winkler. If you wanted to look at the language, yeah. It's in Article 2, pages R-74 and R-75 is where the language
is. You know what the section of the bill is? I don't have it.
If you look at Article, it's section 117. And again, it's a... Senator Russ.
Thank you. So, Representative Winkler, the... it wouldn't go to the Department of Health at all. Is that correct? Or where, if you say it should go to the relevant agency, successor agency, what would you think that would be the most appropriate place? I mean, the only thing that we put in the Department of Health, as far as I can recall, is the health purchasing options, and then we put workers' comp and admin, and then everything else went to finance. But where would you see this going if we indeed did take it up in this bill?
Mr. Chair.
Actually, the language, if you look at page R-74 of Article 2, on 83.35, there's a sentence that says, if the Department of Employee Relations is abolished, then the Minnesota State Colleges and the University's Board of Trustees shall work in collaboration with the commissioner of the department responsible for administration of the state employee group insurance program. So whoever has CGRIP is going to wind up having this if DOER goes away. It says so right there in the
right. I get it.
The enabling language. And then the rider language is in Article 1 on page R-18. And on the Senate language, it says, for a grant to the University of Minnesota Department of Health Informatics to evaluate the use and impact of personal health records on employees of the university and state colleges and universities, this appropriation is available until June
30th, 2009. Thank you.
Anything else? Is there other things that you wish to bring to our attention for your proposals available.
Now, there are a bunch of a bunch of things looking on the no. One, the poet laureate bill, which is actually passed by House and Senate and vetoed by the governor at one point. In a previous session, and it's just a one-line paragraph directing the governor to make the appointment. The this is on the Attorney General Assistance to Vets, which we thought was really important to put that specific authority in. This came up with all of the serious legal problems that people, veterans of the current conflict, are getting into and being asked to make decisions often, sometimes when they're still suffering from brain injuries. And it seemed to me that it needed the higher advocacy legal aid that the Attorney General's office could give rather than the Departments of Military Affairs, the National Guard, or the Vets Assistance, and the Attorney General's office agreed with that. The issue...
Representative Conn, is there a line item for that on the budget thing?
In the R5? Oh, the attorney... No, there isn't a line item. It's just in the... It's in the language related to the Attorney General. The Attorney... We don't delineate what the Attorney General spends money on. It's just an expansion. It's on page R14.
If I may comment on that, the Attorney General did comment on that when she made her presentation, you know, to our budget division. There's no question that there's a lot of veterans and their families, you know, who have a lot of needs, and there's a war going on that's quite unlike any other one that's ever been fought. I mean, we have families back home that are in instant contact, you know, with the service members who are away. They've got emails, cell phones. The problems back home are problems over there, and vice versa. We have people coming home with far different problems that we've seen before, legal, medical, a number of things. I don't. It's certainly a lot can be done and a lot more can be done. We have a lot of National Guard and Reserve Judge Advocates, but there just aren't enough of them to go around to meet the needs. I know for certain that the Minnesota State Bar Association has ramped up quite a bit. They have a very good volunteer lawyer program where they're training people on a lot of the issues that the veterans are having, whether it's family law or consumer rights, the Servicemen's Civil Protection Act, a number of things, employment, re-employment rights. And I just don't know if the Attorney General's, I had the sense that the Attorney General's proposals were somewhat duplicative of some things that are already in place. I don't know. I wasn't as convinced that this was going to be... The need is there, but I think that the need can be addressed in other ways. So I'm certainly willing to listen to proposals to how this is not... What's unique about this, but we were cognizant of what the proposal is, and we just didn't feel that... we just didn't go in that direction. So, go ahead.
Just continuing down to pick one out. This was something which the House eliminated in its budget bill last year on R23, the percent for art, which is the ability to use 1% of building construction funds for artworks related to the building construction. And it was a House proposal last year that I was very surprised, or 2 years ago, I was very surprised that the Senate agreed to that, capped that at $100,000, mm-hmm. which means that caps it for the larger building projects. And again, that one of the problems that it really gave for the people doing it was that was their best source of the administrative money for doing this, when the large projects were capped, so that's just correcting language that was in the budget bill from last year.
I take it that was not a separate bill, that was just for the House position.
It was never a separate bill.
I see, okay.
Okay, sure.
Okay.
It was never a separate bill since 1985 when it was first done.
Sure, okay.
Then the issue of pay equity for state contracts. I'm not sure where that is in the Senate.
It's on the floor on general orders. Senator Pappas is carrying the bill. It came out of the Senate Finance Committee. It's on the floor. I'm reluctant to take up a position that the Senate has not spoken on yet. And we have not taken up the bill. We have not voted on. And so I don't know how in conference committee I can agree to something when I don't even know what the Senate's position is on it. It's a bill, it's there, it's on general orders, but the Senate has not taken it up yet. So I don't know what to do with this one until the Senate does speak on it.
Mr. Chairman?
Sir, rest.
It's my understanding that the bill is going to be heard tomorrow.
Okay.
It was supposed to be already have heard last week, but it got delayed. But it's my understanding it'll be on the general orders.
Okay, I'm not tomorrow. Aware of that. I haven't seen
any
list.
That might change. Things change from day to day, but that's what I was told.
But it's hard to contradict something when the Senate has not taken a position on it. There's a bill, but I don't know what's going to happen to the bill.
I think we do that all the time.
We don't.
The bill's all... Mr. Chairman, as a collective we.
Yeah.
I think bills always appear that have been in one... But not the other.
I think that we would agree that this is a significant issue. It's probably worthy of debate. And I just don't know where the Senate is going to come on it. And I wish that the Senate, if the Senate wants to take a position, it can be scheduled. We can bring it up and debate it and take our position. We just have not done that yet.
And the other one I think they were particularly interested in is... This is a bill of Representative Neva Walters. Again, I'm not sure where it is in the Senate. Additional permissible uses of sick leave.
Of what?
Additional permissible uses of sick leave, which broadens the sick leave provisions for more than, for care of other than dependent children and so forth.
Apparently Senator Erickson Ropes has the companion in the Senate. apparently it's in the Senate Finance Committee, so I don't know you know, if that's going to be released or what's going to happen there, but that's where the companion is.
And then the other thing which we were discussing at Pension Commission, where is the OPEB trust going to be?
Well, that bill, the Senate, it's my understanding, it's still in the Tax Committee. It was not rolled into the Senate tax bill. I believe it's in the public financing bill. And I'm the author of that bill in the Senate. It is here in the House, and it's one of those things, the decision is going to have to be made. Where is it to be conferred? And we can't confer in both places. I think there are some differences between the two, and those have to be resolved, but that's where it's sitting in the Senate.
What? Who's that? Representative Holbrook, what?
I'm sorry.
We're talking about this issue, this OPEB, which is in the Senate Public Finance Bill. What is our equivalent to the Senate Public Finance Bill? We have an equivalent to it in Florida.
Well, there is a Senate, the House, Lincheski had hearings this morning on a public finance bill. Which issue is it? Let me point it out to me. I'm sorry.
The trust, the local government agencies trust for public health care.
For health care, for retirees.
The statewide provision that mirrors Duluth.
From mirrors Duluth. Mm-hmm. I don't think that there was any discussion today, which was her hearing on that issue. And I might be mistaken because I wasn't there for the whole time. I'm really trying to remember what was on the agenda.
Yeah.
And I don't think that was in part of the public financing bill. I would be surprised if it was because it's not really I guess it could be a public financing. But usually the public financing are, you know, authorizing a bond sale to a city or that type of thing and not having a major policy such as the Duluth one was. Now, saying that, I just will have to say I don't know also if it was there today or not. I can find out.
Mr. Chairman. Sarah. Chairman, sometimes the public finance bill is goes separately as well as being rolled into being an article in both the House and the Senate tax bill, but I think the Senate passed its tax bills way too early for that to have happened. So I don't know whether they're planning, whether Senator Bach is planning on passing out an individual public finance bill or where they, on that side, are interested in conferring it. I don't know. Maybe Senator Larson knows. Is there a public finance article in the
Senator
House
Larson
tax bill?
Senator Larson is serving on the Senate Tax Committee, and he's on the conference committee as well. Senator Larson, do you have any?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't have any insights into what the strategy will be in terms of where.
Where is it, though?
I don't believe that it's in the bill. And so I guess the question is the plan to roll it in, and I'm not sure. We have not discussed that. We had our first meeting this evening that was very brief.
But that's
so we haven't discussed this issue beyond what we discussed in tax committee.
But you're referring to the omnibus tax bill, not the public finance bill. Is that what you're referring to?
Well, what I'm referring to, Mr. Chair, is I'm not sure if the public finance bill, if the decision's been made.
Oh.
I'm sure the decision probably has been made where that's going to happen. It's just that the senator doesn't know what that decision is. We certainly can find out and report back.
Okay. Representative Solberg.
I sent someone to try to find what the agenda was for today.
Okay.
In the tax bill. My recollection is at least for the last 6 or 8 years, they have been separate bills. They're not part of the major tax bill.
They've been in the tax bill. They've been in the tax bill.
Well, to me, I think they've been both.
Yeah. And as I recall, I believe when it's been separate, it's usually been a House file, as I recall. But any further? I think we've gone as far as
I don't think that's necessarily.
I don't know if it's been required, but I just seem to recall that it's been, and maybe that's just how it's worked out. So.
Okay. Yeah. What?
Okay.
Okay.
There. Okay.
Okay.
We do have.
Well, why don't
page.
We? Yeah. Can we get
paid?
Yeah. Okay. Here, I'll.
Take one. Take one.
Okay.
One.
Okay. You can split it. Is there anything you want to discuss while the sheet is being handed out to Representative Kahn?
Well, there are again things that are clearly financial. There are things that we've had, like, I think you several times in the course of the special session, you attempted to pass a continuing resolution, and we've attempted to put a continuing resolution light into this language, at least to get us through. You know, my frustration, I guess it was the Senate's frustration, because I think you kept trying to pass one that the House wouldn't take, is that the year of the special sessions, 2005, there were five or six legislators that did not come to an agreement at the same time when the legislators and governors, that did not come to an agreement at the same time as we were not, but we were the only state that shut down with the enormous cost of the shutdown. And this, at least I think I originally wanted to do a continuing resolution similar to Wisconsin's, which did not come to an agreement and did not shut down. But there were people who just thought that was too much of a federalization. So this is a continuing resolution for at least a month, which would see if that would work in case. You know, and we would all hope that we'll be out on May 21st, but at least it would, one of the most frustrating things for a bill that actually got passed before the fiscal year with the Environment and Natural Resources Bill was that before the July 4th weekend, you had all these families lined up before that weekend waiting to get into the state park, and the state park not letting them in with their phone call to the governor's office trying to find out if the bill was formed because they were signed, because they were afraid if it wasn't signed, they'd let it out. So they'd have to throw them out. So at least this continuing resolution, whereas I would have preferred to have it for a year, at least takes us through the start of the summer. Then several things that I don't know if we want to repeal, but I mean, we put them in as repealers, but maybe they should just be made to work a little better, such as the price of government and the fee tax definition. Which we understand, even though the Senate was half of the initiator of the fee tax definition, you didn't make any of your appropriations bills go through the tax committee. So, since we had the experience, of having to take all our appropriations bills through three committees, we're quite anxious to get rid of that. So again, it's things which clearly belong in this bill, which I don't think are a problem.
Okay.
So all of those, so we didn't give a position of which of these you want and which ones, or rather, since they're mainly ours, which ones you don't want. It would probably be the place to start from, because we felt we had to deal with the bigger decision of how big the bill is going to be.
And of course, I was on the tax conference committee in 2005 when the tax is a fee is a tax language, but that was put in the tax bill, so I don't know if that's where it should be dealt with again, but
well,
I was there.
Through the tax committee,
right,
and
then
did stay
it
in the tax
here.
Because ours came through the tax committee, so
okay.
It did come through the tax committee and
okay.
Stay there. So there was a motion to take it out.
Okay, it was, so is that in the tax bill now? Is
no,
that,
it's in this
bill. In this
but
bill.
But still had to go through the tax.
I see. I'm with you. Okay.
The tax
gotcha.
Committee.
Gotcha. Okay. Is there anything else you want to bring forward before we go to the spreadsheets?
I don't think so.
Okay.
I mean,
perhaps
I
you can have your analysts go through the spreadsheets, and then we'll
and
just see where we're at. So.
Yeah.
Okay. Who? Ms. Roberts?
Yeah.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair members, the first thing I'd like to point out is I just thought I had changed the footer on this, that Mr. Lundeen did not actually prepare this.
Oh.
But I did. He was kind enough to share
sure.
the spreadsheet that he used for this to speed things up, so I could just add to it, but I just wanted to clarify that.
Gotcha.
So the just to walk you through, I've added some additional columns, the house offer for fiscal year 08-09, and then the shaded column that comes after that shows the difference for 08-09 only from house offer number one compared to Senate offer number one. And then after that, I have the columns for the tails.
Okay.
So if it would work, I could just highlight the differences in the offer.
I think that would be helpful. We have the Senate offer already, so if you could just highlight where the House changes from the Senate offer, that would I think that would get us there. So,
Mr. Chair, the first change is under the LCC for the New Americans Commission.
Okay.
The Senate offer had $100,000 allocated for that, and mm-hmm. the House offer has $75,000. The next change in the House offer is $100,000 and for the Commission to End Poverty.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Holberg.
I think there might also be an over-explanation, and the New Americans Commission and the Ethnic Heritage Commission seem to be addressing the same thing.
That's what I said.
And so I think in that effect we're kind of combining the two.
Mm-hmm.
Into that appropriation.
That was exactly our plan for the in the first lesson.
So, and then, Mr. Chim, so we went sort of halfway between the two appropriations.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, the next change, again under the LCC, $350,000 is included for the Terrorism and Disaster Planning Commission.
Right. If I can make one comment before, the Ending Poverty Commission was something that was actually passed into law.
Yeah.
Last year, but was never funded.
As I recall, they were given $250,000, but they haven't spent any of it.
Oh,
so.
Didn't spend any of it.
That's why we were even reluctant to give them the $100,000, figuring, well, spend what you got first, and then let's visit. Okay. So, okay.
The next change again under the LCC. Difference from the Senate offer, the House is not including the $500,000 for the state budget trends study.
But as we were discussing, Mr. Chairman, if I can add, as we were discussing that, we thought that the language of the things should be studied was appropriate, but we really thought that it was appropriate to leave it in the Finance and Revenue Departments and then just put legislative oversight on that.
Okay. Well, we're reaching agreement, so go ahead.
Now, moving down to the Secretary of State,
mm-hmm.
the House offer includes $150,000 more for the Safe at Home program. The next item is, again, under the Secretary of State, the offer includes $100,000 for the absentee ballot initiative. And then right under that, $50,000 in one-time funding for the Secretary of State's Blue Book funding increase. There are two small items after this. The first, $6,000, and then ongoing funding for the Campaign Finance Board operating increase, and then $28,000 for the Administrative Hearings Municipal Boundaries Rent Adjustment. For the first item under the Office of Enterprise Technology, I should note that the House offer includes the Senate number on funding for the IT security, but the tails have been reduced for this item. The next change item is, or the next difference is $2 million is included for the in one-time funding for the electronic licensing initiative under the Office of Enterprise Technology. $68,000 in one-time money is included.
Mr. Chairman, if I can comment on that, the reason why that is done, we also have language that requires them to look at licensing agreements and look at getting the kind of thing that the governor tried to do with highways but didn't work for highways, but we're kind of assured by that it could work for technology stuff where they put the money up and then do it.
Sure, I wouldn't necessarily characterize it that way, Representative Kahn. But
oh, well.
I won't get into it.
It's just a think of it as a metaphor, not an analogy.
I don't even like this.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, after that, next change item is $200,000 in one-time funding for grants to counties for integration of their financial systems. Under the Department of Administration, the House offering includes additional funding of $590,000 for the Land Management Information Center increase. Mm-hmm. And that would include increased sales for that item. And then you'll note that, there is no funding included in the offer for the capital restoration design.
Heavens, I thought you had some support there. Okay, go ahead.
$2.5 million is included for the real property enterprise system within the Department of Administration, and this is one-time funding. $885,000 is included for the Department of Public Safety Emergency Operations Relocation. $89,000 in one-time funding for the DNA study group. $500,000 for the biennium and ongoing funding for the small agency resource team. Again, these are all within Department of Administration. Mm-hmm. And then also $500,000 for the public safety network project. Still within Department of Administration, $75,000 for the promotion of document imaging. $125,000 in startup money for the Office of Grants Management. And I believe that would pick up the House position on funding that ongoing through the grants. We have $180,000 in for the Veterans Procurement Preference. That's, I believe the bill has passed separately in the Senate. $50,000 is included in the House offer, one-time funding for the state contracts website, and $100,000 in one-time funding for the Sustainable Growth Working Group.
If I could make a comment on that, Madam Chair. Mm-hmm. I'm aware of the issue, and I've been visited by some individuals. I don't want to really go into a lot of detail, but I was frankly disappointed that the bill in the Senate wasn't even introduced until March 21st, which was just about the time when this bill was being wrapped up and already out of finance and on its way to the floor. And all of a sudden, it has to be it's a huge emergency. We've got to get it done this year. When I think people could have kind of paid a little closer attention to what's going on here at the Capitol and probably gotten something to us on time. So that's one of the reasons why nothing showed up in the Senate on the Sustainable Growth Working Group, because, you know, it's due diligence. You know, planning ahead on their part would have helped them a lot instead of, you know, trying to reach consensus. So that's why nothing appeared in the Senate bills.
Mr. Chairman.
And Senator Rust was the author of the bill.
Yeah.
Senator Rust.
Mr. Chairman, some of us are more sympathetic to this position of the House than others, maybe.
Yeah.
The bill in the Senate, however, is the captive right now of the Rules Committee, and which may or may not get out of the, may or may not get a hearing there since it is a late bill, even though it was heard the day after it was introduced in my committee.
Anyway, that's made my point. Okay, go ahead.
Okay. Mr. Chair, continuing on under the Capital Area Architectural and Planning Board, the House offer includes $112,000 for the additional operating expenses of the board. And I should just note real quickly, although this looks like a difference from the original House position, because the board will pick up additional funding because of the compensation increase that the House had a lower number in. So they'll be at the same number in this offer as they were in the House bill originally. Moving down under the Department of Employee Relations, $350,000 in one-time funding is included for Representative Winkler's personal health records pilot. $389,000 is included for coverage of the expansion of personal sick leave benefits. $500,000 in ongoing funding for the Center for Healthcare Purchasing. That was a governor's initiative. And now moving down to the Department of Revenue, the House offer includes $10.55 million for the integrated tax system. I think the only other change in the general fund, moving down to the revenue items, is picking up the House position on the LGA billing increase. That's $794,000 in increased general fund revenue. And finally, on the last page, just moving down into the non-general fund items, the House offer includes the $532,000 for the additional workers' compensation judges in Duluth. And then finally, at the very bottom of the spreadsheet, the $75,000 that is shown is the fee in the House position on the pay equity compliance certificate fee.
Thank you. Are there any questions on the House proposal right now? Anything that Madam Chair, you wish to offer in addition?
Are there any comments that we should have?
Well, I think we need to evaluate it.
Wrap it up pretty quickly.
Yeah, you could. You know, you sure got a lot of money to spend if you're not going to invest in the capital, but that's fine. You know, we'll...
point that we do would like to make, Mr. Chairman, is that there is $1.4 million left from the money that they had last year for the various planning. And as Representative Vestager, I'm very sympathetic to the restoration of the capital of the high quality. I'm very sympathetic that the proposal has moved very far ahead without anyone talking to anybody in the House about what they were interested in and what they thought about House issues, and then about where things are going to go. So I was surprised at the highly negative response from the House Capital Investment Committee to the plan. Yeah. And I just really think, I'd be very much more sensitive to, and as you said, it is true that the Commission of Poverty has $250,000, and you're right, we should not give them any more money, but I think it's the same thing we felt about the capital restoration. They've got this $1.4 million left over from last year's planning, and they should use that and come back to us. That really should be a bonding. Next year is our big bonding year, and I would like to see it done right in that big bonding year.
Well, I think the Senate was prepared to put some money into the bonding bill this year. We needed some push from either the governor or the House. Didn't happen, but I don't think that kills the issue. I think we can, if anything's going to happen, it's going to happen in this conference committee, but we don't have much time to do that. So, but we'll see. Representative Solberg.
Mr. Chair, Senator Menzel, the Senate passed the bonding bill. Was there money included in the Senate for... the Senate doesn't really have a position on...
Well, not the bonding bill, Representative Solberg. We earmarked some money that was in our state government budget bill.
So, Senator, is the $400,000 enough then to do?
No. Well, I think we may have some additional...
Strange.
Yeah. We may have some additional information tomorrow. We'll be happy to discuss, but we'll come back and review your proposal and see what we can respond with. Is there anybody here who wants to bring anything to our attention? I think we've come as far as we can go tonight. If there's anybody who wants to bring anything to our attention that we are overlooking, that we're missing, I don't see anybody rushing up here. Madam Chair, I think we've gone as far as we can go. What's your plan now?
Plan would be that we try and convene at the same... the House is convening at 10 o'clock.
Right.
And the Senate is convening at...
The Senate's convening at 11. However... There is an issue on electronic medical records that's being conferred in the Human Services Bill, and I'm the chief author of that. And Senator Moore decided to have a hearing in the Judiciary Committee immediately after the Senate adjourns tomorrow. So we won't be able to meet immediately after the session adjourns, but...
do you think if we try scheduling it, keep in contact, scheduling it for an hour after the...
The second body,
The second body adjourned.
Right.
Make that at the call of the chair, which I guess is me.
That'll be tomorrow, yes.
And we'll just be in contact with you. We need to exchange, staff needs to exchange cell phone numbers, et cetera.
And given the fact we've got the morning available and some floor session time, I think we have.
Time for
but I,
to talk about.
I, I, I would think it'd be a little bit longer after 1 hour of the second body adjourns. I'm just guessing. So, but I would assume it's not earlier than that.
Mm-hmm.
But it'll be at the call of the chair tomorrow after this after the second body
adjourns.
That
will be obviously as soon as you're.
Yeah.
Oh, you know,
it's a data practices issue. Mr. Neumeister's got some points he wants to make. So who knows?
That might be CEO.
I know. Is there anything else coming for the conference committee?
So what did we do?
If not, thank you very much, and the meeting is adjourned. Thank you.